Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to this special meeting of the California Fish and Game Commission. My name is Mike Sutton from Monterey, Vice President of the Commission. We have two other commissioners here today, which means we have a quorum. I apologize for starting late, but our flight was late. Our transportation, we had transportation issues today, so apologize for keeping you waiting. On my left is Commissioner Jack Bayless from Los Angeles. On my right, two over, is Commissioner Richard Rogers from Santa Barbara. We also have Sankey Mastrup, the Executive Director of the Commission here, Rick Thalhammer, our esteemed counsel, Adriana Shea, our Deputy Executive Director, Sherry Von Buena, Anita Biederman, and Chuck Bonham, the Director of the Department of Fish and Game. Welcome, everybody. We have some wardens here today, A.J. Bolton from Eureka, Rick Banco from Arcata, and John Wilcox from Eureka. Thanks for being here. And to you all. Sankey's going to introduce our agenda.
All right. Good morning, everyone. Our goal today is informed decision-making, and that spirit we all need to work together to make that happen. We are operating under the Bagley-Keene Open Meeting Act. Proceedings are being recorded, so think before you speak. Each person has a total of 10 minutes for the day to speak on items on the agenda. The amount of time for each agenda item may be adjusted based on time available and the number of speakers. Speaker cards need to be turned in to Anita Biederman, the lady standing up there and waving at you, before the agenda item is preferable. Please make sure to list the agenda item you wish to speak to on the speaker card. That helps us. We'll be calling several names at a time in the order. You will be called, so please line up behind the podium. If you are not in the room when your name is called, your opportunity may be forfeited, so please pay attention. When you come up to speak, please state your name and any affiliation, if any. Please be respectful, and disruptions from the audience will not be tolerated. Time is precious, so please be concise, and a warning on laser pointers. Only use laser pointers if you're doing a presentation. Use them any other time, it could cause you to be arrested. And with that, Mr. Vice President, we have three dignitaries I'd like to call out, may want to recognize. We have Assemblyman Wes Chesbro. We have Zaretti Goosby from Senator Evans' office is here. And then Jimmy Smith, Humboldt County Board of Supervisor, was interested in welcoming you, if you'd like. Is that all right? All right. With that, I'll call Jimmy Smith up, and he can do a little welcome, and then we'll do a public forum.
Thank you very much, Sankey. It's great to have you all here. Just a short welcome on behalf of the Humboldt County Board of Supervisors, again to Humboldt County. You folks have spent a lot of time with us in the last few months, and we want to acknowledge that and thank you for joining us here in Humboldt again. And know this has been a very complicated subject. I was a member of the Blue Ribbon Task Force and worked with the department and all the stakeholder groups, and they did a tremendous job. And now all the tough decisions are on your desks. But we really do honestly appreciate you and all the good work that you do. So anything that we can do to help you, please let me know, and we'd be happy to accommodate any of your wishes. And thanks again for spending time with us here in Humboldt.
All right, thank you. And Assemblyman Wes Chesbro, I understand you'd like to address the commission. If you can come on up.
Well, thank you very much, and I'd like to echo Supervisor Smith's remarks. It's really great to have the commission once again here in Humboldt County, and in so many ways we feel a long ways from Sacramento, but when important decision makers come here, it really helps us feel more connected to the decision-making process, so thank you. Vice President Sutton and members of the commission, for the record, I am Assemblyman Wes Chesbro, and I chair the Joint Legislative Committee on Fisheries and Aquaculture. As a representative of the North Coast region affected by the proposed MPAs, I am before you to provide comment on the decision before you regarding adoption. So I hope this is the appropriate time for me to go ahead and make that presentation. On January 21st, 2011, as chair of the Joint Fisheries Committee, I convened a hearing in Eureka for the purpose of hearing testimony on the Marine Life Protection Act initiative implementation on the North Coast. We heard from staff, from Blue Ribbon Task Force members, local elected officials, regional stakeholders, and members of the public. Over 50 speakers provided testimony. Subsequently, I have worked continuously with the Brown administration, especially Secretary Laird. I have cooperated with the Fish and Game commissioners and staff, DFG staff and MLPA staff to support our North Coast Regional Stakeholders Group and the Blue Ribbon Task Force and our Native American tribes. I'm here to relay the concerns and recommendations that I heard at that hearing and since, as well as to support the unified position of the local stakeholders. It's unanimous. We on the North Coast all support protecting our ocean fisheries resources, and we highly value sustainable commercial, recreational, and traditional harvests of those resources. The question is how best to accomplish and balance those goals, and that's what you have before you today. At the outset of the MLPA process, opinion was varied, to say the least, from the MPA's being an overly burdensome, unnecessary economic disaster to an urgently needed mechanism to save our fisheries from overuse. With such disparity of opinion, few, I think, had any belief that any kind of unity could be arrived at in our community, and there was a lot of fear that the entire process would become unraveled. It was originally inconceivable that a consensus agreement could be reached, especially given the divisiveness that occurred in other regions as this process has gone forward. We accomplished what no other region has been able to do, generate a single unified proposal that all the representatives are able to live with. Nobody got everything they wanted. Everyone sacrificed their time, their energy, their personal finances, and other important positions, often important positions, in order to reach that consensus. They reached agreement on a careful balance of compromises after a thorough examination and discussion of the alternatives. The RSG deserves our continued respect and applause for doing the heavy lifting in reaching the consensus that they did. The unified array, with some clarifications, was advanced by the Blue Ribbon Task Force to the Commission for your consideration. The intent of both the RSG and the Blue Ribbon Task Force to allow for traditional non-commercial fishing, gathering, and harvesting for subsistence, ceremonial, or stewardship purposes by the California tribes and tribal communities. And I have that in my remarks in parentheses because that is the direct quote from their recommendation. Tribal representatives were unanimous in their opposition to the MPAs until their needs were met, and you may recall that I supported them in that, as has Secretary Laird. Without an administrative solution, we would face either legislation, litigation, or both, and risk the collapse of the unified position on the North Coast. I cannot adequately stress how critical this is to me, to the North Coast, and to any hope of successful implementation of the Marine Life Protection Act in our region. From the beginning, it's been a priority for me to have the tribal issue resolved. The tribal issues resolved. From his first day in office, I reached out to Secretary Laird. In fact, I think the day he appointed was the first cell phone conversation that he and I had. He immediately took those concerns to heart and worked diligently to help us move towards a resolution of this issue, and you may recall appeared before this commission to express that. The unified array proposal was unanimously supported by 20 agencies on the North Coast, including every city council, every board of supervisors, every harbor district, and 21 organizations within the study region. With your help and the continued commitment of Secretary Laird and Governor Brown's administration, it has gained the support of the tribes. Resolution of tribal concerns is paramount to achieving community support and successful implementation of the marine protected areas. I am strongly supportive of including tribal uses within all categories of North Coast Region MPAs. Again, I would like to thank the administration, Secretary Laird, the commission, and all their staff for working with the tribes to create a solution. Not only have we met this challenge to the marine protected areas, but we have set the stage for future consideration on a wide array of tribal issues. I believe the governor believes that this is a precedent and a first step, and that we're exploring new territory in terms of a new relationship between state government and the tribes. The stakeholders have consistently stated their unwavering commitment to their negotiated agreements. Of utmost importance to them is adhering to the boundaries that were painstakingly developed and extensively negotiated. It is critical for the Commission to maintain these boundaries by adopting options one in the proposed regulations for all the boundary sub-options. The stakeholders have reiterated this is their highest priority within the sub-options being considered. The issue of boundaries is not trivial to the stakeholders. Please recall they were unanimously supported by the RSG, the BRTF, and 20 agencies, including all of the local governments I mentioned. Retaining the proposed boundaries by adopting option one for Pyramid Point, South Humboldt Bay, Sea Lion Gulch, and 10 Mile Beach will have a dramatic effect on the ability, your ability to implement, our ability to implement your actions. Because as you know, the state alone does not have the resources to make this work. The commitment of the user groups and the local communities is absolutely essential to the success of the Marine Life Protection Act. The proposed regulations, including the options for tribal take and proposed boundaries, are not to be taken lightly and should be supported so as not to upset the very delicate balance that was arrived at through the negotiating process between all of the various groups in our region. The proposed regulations are an unprecedented accomplishment, provide a wonderful opportunity for this commission to act in unity with our local communities and with North Coast stakeholders. So on behalf of the overwhelming consensus of the North Coast, I urge you to support our community's request. Again, I thank you for your dedication and your diligence, your willingness to meet here, and all of the work that's been put in by people at all levels to bring us to this point. And I'm very hopeful and encouraged that you're going to help us complete this process. Thank you.
Thank you. Zaretti Guzby, and after Zaretti, Dan Hamburg, Mendocino County Board of Supervisor.
Thank you. Vice Chair Sutton, members of the Commission, my name is Zaretti Guzby, and I'm a senior field representative for State Senator Noreen Evans, who extends her regrets for not being able to be here today, but she did not want to let this meeting go without her being able to take the position in support of basically the comments that Assemblymember Chesbro made. Senator Evans is a member of the Fisheries and Aquaculture Subcommittee, participated in that the meeting process and monitoring the efforts of the development of the MLPA, and wants to go on record in support of those comments as made by Assemblymember Chesbro. Further, she wanted to underscore the significance of the unprecedented effort by the stakeholders of the North Coast to develop a plan that all could support. As Assemblymember Chesbro said, this is unprecedented, and we were fortunate enough to benefit from the experiences of the plans that were developed for other regions in the state and use those experiences to come up with what really is an unprecedented effort here on the North Coast. Essential, she feels, to stick with the consolidated plan that includes option one of the boundary alternatives, and she encourages the Commission to make every effort to work to resolve the tribal issues that are still outstanding. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan Hamburg. And if there are any tribal council chairs, since we're in the dignitaries section of the meeting, you're welcome to come up and do an introductory remark after Dan Hamburg.
Hello, and thank you for being here. And I'm not going to disagree with anything that the Assemblyman said or...
Excuse me, could you identify yourself?
Oh, I know I'm sorry. Dan Hamburg, Board of Supervisors, Mendocino County, 5th District. So a good part of my district is quite affected by this. I have the area from Mendocino to the Wallala River. Along the Mendocino coast. So this has been quite a controversial issue in my district and throughout Mendocino County. And I do want to echo the remarks that have been made by Assemblyman Chesbro and Zaretti Guzby in terms of how far we have come with this preferred alternative. I have a statement that I'd like to read. It's not very long. It's from the Mendocino County Board of Supervisors, our meeting of May 22nd. 2012, in which we voted unanimously to bring this position to the Commission today. Over the past 3 years, local stakeholders on the North Coast have worked very hard to develop a proposed marine protected area network in accordance with the requirements of the MLPA. These considerable efforts of the stakeholder group have led to a consensus on a single MPA network design, and we feel this is a major accomplishment supported by conservation and fishing organizations, city and county government agencies, harbor districts, state elected officials, and the task force itself. We're pleased to see that the commission and the department have honored this effort by making it the preferred alternative in both the draft initial statement of reasons, the ISOR, for regulatory action, and the DEIR. However, we are concerned that both the ISOR and the DEIR contain a number of options that potentially could modify the preferred alternative. Many of these options appear to be based on perceived ease of enforcement. The differences between options, we do not believe, are trivial differences. Each MPA boundary and regulation was carefully considered and often debated at length by the stakeholder group. What might appear as minor differences on a map can result in major consequences to the affected communities. The widely supported network design represents numerous compromises and considerations regarding ecological and socioeconomic issues. We believe that keeping the boundaries and regulations as recommended by the stakeholder group is the best way to ensure compliance and a positive relationship between ocean users and the wardens who will enforce the MPAs. Additionally, the stakeholder group's careful placement of boundaries was informed by local knowledge provided by marine users who are intimately familiar with our coastline and was designed for both ease of understanding and for compliance. Shifting a boundary from a latitude reference to an onshore landmark, for example, is less than useful when more fishermen rely on GPS than on an often foggy coastline. Each recommendation of the stakeholder group MPA proposal is based on the experience of users and DFG guidance, and therefore should be adhered to in the final adoption of the regulation that will implement the proposal. We also note, with respect to recent department revisioning, this proposal creates great potential for DFG to establish collaborative relationships with other agencies, including harbor districts and, of course, the tribes of the North Coast. We're pleased that per the proposed regulation charts in the ISOR and consistent with the recommendations of the stakeholder group, the draft regulation includes specific provisions that authorize the 24 federally recognized tribes in the North Coast Study Region to continue their traditional non-commercial gathering, harvesting, and fishing at a combined total of 10 locations to be designated as state marine conservation areas, and also one location which is to be designated as a state marine recreational management area within the tribe's respective ancestral territories. A total of 10 of those tribes are situated in Mendocino County, and another 7 are located in Lake County. The provisions for continued tribal use contained in the proposed regulations have been promulgated in recognition of widespread community support for the state of California's formal recognition and protection of North Coast tribes' traditional marine uses and the understanding that traditional subsistence, ceremonial, and stewardship practices are inextricably linked to the tribe's spiritual and cultural ways of life. We strongly support future collaboration between the tribes and both California Fish and Game Commission and the Department of Fish and Game to develop ways of preserving the North Coast tribal heritage and preventing negative impacts to the tribe's traditional practices of gathering. For all these reasons, we strongly encourage you to continue supporting the recommendations of the North Coast Regional Stakeholder Group as put forth by the Blue Ribbon Task Force and to adopt the preferred alternative as designed by the North Coast Regional Stakeholder Group, signed by Chair John McCowan, Mendocino County Board of Supervisors, and again passed unanimously on May 22nd of this year. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And I have two elected officials from two of the tribes, Priscilla Hunter and Daniel Rocky, Sr. Do you wish to speak now or under the specific agenda item?
Sorry, I guess I didn't get my name in. I am Dale Miller. I'm the tribal chairman at Elk Valley Rancheria, located in Del Norte County. I'm actually here today representing the North Coast Chairman's Association, and I just wanted to say a couple of words. Of course, welcome, Ayakwe. We really appreciate the work that you have done with tribes and included us in that. We certainly do have some concerns with the draft that has been talked about here today and that you're making this decision on. But we are know that it's just the first day of the process, that we're still going to be able to have some input and work on that, and we certainly want that to happen. The North Coast Chairs, of course, speaks for the tribes in Northern California, but tribes themselves also have individual priorities in too. So I'm just here representing the Chairs Association who wanted to address you and indicate our concerns. We understand the importance, and we thank the community and the various state agencies that have worked with us on this, and we just want to make sure that we're able to indicate how important our cultural and traditional areas are to the tribes in California, and that's one thing that we all stand together on, even though we do have individual issues. And you're going to hear today from some tribal people that will talk about specific issues that they have. But the Tribal North Coast Tribal Chairman's Association just wanted to thank you for coming and to indicate that we do support a lot of what's been done, and we really appreciate the ability to have been involved in that. So thank you.
Thank you. Priscilla Hunter or Daniel Rocky?
Under the regulations.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. With that, Mr. Vice President, we can move to public forum. All right. First speaker under public forum, Charles Bucaria, and followed by Brandy Easter, followed by
Excuse
Tim
me.
Klassen.
Ayikwe, I'd like to thank you here for taking the time today. David Jensaw, Sr., you're our tribal councilman. I would like to let you know that our chair is sick today, so he's not able to be here. However, also, I would like to acknowledge the Wiat people. We are in their territory today, and I think that's important. Speaking for the Yurok people, you know, we are hunters, fishers, and gatherers. We've lived here since time immemorial, and we gathered these shores forever since Creator put us here. Our people have suffered tremendously with diabetes, high cholesterols, high blood pressure. They call that the pyramid. You got that, you know, most of our people do. Our tribal families, I don't think none of us can turn around and say there's none of that in our families. But we know the reason it is in our families is because of the change of the diet since the arrival of the Europeans. The food that was promised to us in the times of the conquest, it wasn't nourishing. And to take these foods from us, you know, made our people ill. However, we still continue, for what we have, we still continue to get out there and gather. Gather for our families, gather for our elders, our children, the people that can't get out there and gather for themselves. So with what they have of that traditional foods, keeps them thriving. You know, our people have fought before us, our ancestors fought and died for us to be here today. It's our job, it's our duty today to fight for them. Our people, our tribe, we told you how we felt about your science. That hasn't been to the attention to the Fish and Game Commission, to the task force, the science advisory team. We're here today to tell you we need that subsistence. We will continue to provide our people with that nourishment. False Klamath Cove, we don't want it there. We want to be able to gather like we have forever. My father, he's told me stories about my great-grandmother, Kitty Jinsaw Awak, my aunt Florence Shaughnessy, and all the children that they raised, how they used to go there and camp for weeks at a time. They'd dry their seaweed, dry their mussels, the clams, and other fishes that come from that area. They'd dry them and they'd pack them out. It was trade and barter for people upriver, for their families for the winter. Those are stories that we have, and those are places that we go, and those are places that we still go. My great-grandmother, Maggie Pilgrim, she was Talawa Yurok. As a little boy, I remember going there to their camp in Smith River, that very same place that you proposed to shut down and dry the kegess, the cannel fish. We will make that stand to continue to do this for future generations. However, you know, we are stewards of this land. We always have been. We will work with you to be stewards, to be better stewards, if you're willing to work with us. We have that traditional knowledge, that traditional science background that's been given us from the beginning of time. But I want you to make no mistake, you know, there's other tribes that have their own agenda. That's what the Yuroks are making this stand. The Northern California Tribal Association, they made their stand. I would like that known. We're going to continue. We're going to continue to live the way we have from the beginning of time, today, and in the future. That's survival. We're a sovereign nation. We never ceded any of this. We never ceded any of our rights to hunt, fish, or gather, and we never will. And that's important to our people, for us to be here and to let you know that. Bon call.
Thank you. That brings us to public forum, not general public comment. Charles Bricario, Brandy Easter, Tim Klassen, and you have 3 minutes each.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to encourage everybody to be brief. We have 3 minutes on the clock per person. If you need less time than that, that would be great. We have a quorum here for about 3 hours. Then one of our commissioners has to go back to New York City, having come out especially for this meeting from Washington. So if you can be brief and not repetitive, if one of your mates has said exactly the same thing, don't feel like you have to say it again. We get it. Keep it brief, and let's try to get through this. And I know a lot of people have things to say, and we have presentations to listen to. We need to keep moving along. Charles. Right.
Thank you, Mr. Sutton. My name is Charles Bucaria. I'm with the Federation of Fly Fishers. I would merely like to remind the commission that our federation has provided you with a petition that the recommendations that we have made to your commission be considered along with those of the Department of Fish and Game during this current regulatory season this year. The problem we're addressing is related to snagging, whether it's on the American River below Nimbus Dam, on the Feather River at the confluence of the After Bay, or whether it's in the low-flow closure area and throughout the Smith River Snagging of salmon and steelhead is a problem. We thank the department for having addressed it in part on the Smith River. We propose a three-year trial on the Smith of several anti-snagging recommendations that will, we hope, provide evidence in the future that might be adaptable to other waters. Specifically, we would like to ask your commission to approve the consolidation of our requests with that of Fish and Game. Two, we'd like to have this three-year trial on the Smith River only of these anti-snagging recommendations. Three, and this is the start of our serious proposals, we propose that only single point barbless hooks be permitted to be used by all anglers, whether they're fly fishers, whether they are bait fishers, or whether they are lure fishers. That would mean that there would be no treble hooks allowed on that river at any time. The second point that is of importance to us is we would like to see the 400 cubic feet per second present low flow closure area continue to be set by the 400 foot mark so that the maximum number of sportsman anglers can catch the maximum number of fish that would be allowed. The department has recommended that be increased to 600 CFS. We believe that that would limit the number of fish that could be caught. And then we also support a gear restriction that would require there be a movement of lures, that they not be allowed to sink to the bottom where snaggers can use them. And we've passed out some information for your use in reviewing these materials. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Brandy Easter.
Good afternoon, commissioners, and welcome back to Humboldt County and the North Coast. It's good to have you here. My name is Brandy Easter, and you might be more familiar with me as a stakeholder talking to you about the Marine Life Protection Act process and fishery issues and regulations. But today I'm going to be addressing terrestrial issues and speaking on behalf of Florence P. Sloan in regards to proposed language cleanup of Title 14, Sections 550 and Sections 551, and at all with the land use regulations. Mrs. Sloan acknowledges the department staff's continued willingness to meet with the affected stakeholders between now and the Lake Mammoth meeting and requests that this particular aspect of the language be discussed at these particular meetings. She also requests your consideration with the issues raised, written comment. That these be suggested. I was going to read her statement, but I'm actually wanting to move on and get on to the other agenda items. I've also given you a letter from Russ Stewart in regards to the same issues. Thank you so much for your their consideration.
Tim Clausen, followed by Jim Martin, followed by Jim Yarnall.
Hi, I'm Tim Clausen. I'm a charter boat operator here in Eureka. We got a mighty fleet. There's four of us. They're all six packs, so we don't have a lot of presence, but our jobs are important to us. I'm going to talk to you about Pacific halibut. The Pacific halibut fishery has become very important to us and to recreational fishing and the supporting businesses here in Humboldt County and Dillnort County. We already have pretty strict restrictions on rockfish, the most restrictive in the state. We have the shortest seasons and the most restrictive depth restrictions. We're in the Klamath Management Zone, so we get a lot of variability in our salmon seasons and stuff. The Pacific halibut's been the one thing that's been dependable for us. It's as many of you know, it's coming up in the PFMC to reevaluate the allocation. California's allocation, which includes Brookings, Oregon, is 1.4% of the recreational allocation. So I'm just asking that maybe you would support our representatives at the PFMC to request maybe a more significant percentage allocation. You know, we're not asking for the world, but maybe something a little more reasonable than 1.4%. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Thank you. I don't know whether you followed the commission, the last commission meeting in Monterey, but we discussed this issue at some length, and I think there's a lot of support here for what you have in mind. As you know, California has a seat on the Pacific Council, and our representatives are acutely aware of this issue. We would love to see a greater allocation for California for this area. It is, however, as you know, not up to us, and so we have to lobby the council. And we know council members, and we can do that on your behalf. So we will be working with the state, with the Department of Fish and Game, whose Marine Region director sits on the council, to do that.
Thank you very much. That's what we're just asking for your support on that. Thanks.
Thank you. Jim Martin, followed by Jim Yarnall, followed by Mark Henley.
Jim Martin speaking on behalf of the Recreational Fishing Alliance. To save time, I totally support what Tim just said. I'm really happy to hear that you're going to support us at the council. One other change or one other request I'd have is that you may want to write to the International Pacific Halibut Commission and support a recreational representative. We have two strong candidates from Alaska, and that would avoid some of these things. If we go down to 6,000 pounds a year, we do not have a fishery. And appreciate your support.
Thank you. Jim Yarnell.
Good afternoon, commissioners and staff. Jim Yarnell, representing Humboldt Area Saltwater Anglers. I'm here also to briefly touch on the Pacific Halibut allocation issue. We're very pleased that you're taking our concern. We realize that you don't have authority or jurisdiction over this issue. We just wish that you would show the support to state staff and allocate or advocate their position to strongly represent California in the PFMC and the Halibut Commission's process, because the 6,000, 56,000 pound 2012 allocation from south of Humbug Mountain for California is not a fishery adequate fishery for California. Until recently, the Halibut Commission didn't consider California even on the map, so they disregarded it. California didn't come to the table on this, so they were left out of the catch share program. Now that we didn't have a salmon season in 2008-09, we saw the effort shift towards developing this halibut fishery. California does have adequate and halibut habitat, and the commercial landings, the past commercial landings, show Eureka having up to 500,000 pounds annually. So California can support adequate halibut fishery, and we'd just like you to push for maybe a stock assessment in California, and any of those increased allowances should remain in California, and also to direct California Fish and Game staff at that process. This is a trophy fishery in California that brings a lot of economic benefit to the counties of Humboldt, Mendocino, and Del Norte. And many of the recreational anglers within California don't have the resources to travel outside of the state or outside of the country to catch one of these fine fishes. Thank you very much for your support.
Thank you, Commissioner Rogers.
Sir, I'd like to reiterate slightly, and perhaps expand a bit on what Commissioner Sutton said previously to the previous speakers. This commission, through its Marine Subcommittee, Marine Resources Subcommittee, is aggressively interested in pursuing that fishery. The Marine Region's manager, Maria Vojkovic, is right. Also aggressively interested. We're well aware it's a stock assessment allocation. We understand that, and we're doing everything we can to put pressure on the situation. We believe that it is a trophy fishery, and that you should be having it.
We appreciate all your support, and we appreciate the support that you give to Maria and Marcy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mark Henley, followed by Cliff Hart, followed by Julie Cairns.
Hello there, Mr. Vice President, members of the Commission. Mark Henley with California Waterfowl Association. Wanted to follow up on the discussion in Monterey regarding the Hound Bill, SB 1221. We wanted to urge you to reconsider your stance on that bill. We believe strongly that it is a jurisdictional issue as it relates to the Commission. Fully one half of the bill deals with bobcats, which is fully within your jurisdiction. You also have control over the use of dogs for bears as it relates to both electronic collars and educating dogs during season, for example. We believe the flaw in with SB 1221 is not necessarily that it removes the statutory guarantee over the use of dogs for bear hunting, but rather that it also legislatively bans a long-standing traditional hunting practice. This is basically unprecedented in modern times in California, to my knowledge. The only other one that I can possibly think of, we had a bill a few years back that banned computer-assisted remote hunting, but that, of course, was a practice that hadn't even taken place yet. So we believe that, you know, this should be your decision, and that it should be based primarily on science, CEQA, and that the decision should not be politicized. A few other points. That I think, you know, regardless of how you feel on the jurisdictional issues, you should also consider. We know that this is going to result in considerably less dollars available for fish and game for law enforcement purposes because there's going to be a reduction in the big game management account. That also aids the conservation of other big game species. It's going to result also in a considerably fewer number of legal hunters in the field, many of whom assist the department with reporting illegal marijuana cultivation and other illegal activities on public lands. Hunters, of course, are some of the prime users of the CalTIP system. We need more of them in the field, not less. And finally, it also leaves fish and game with very limited bear management tools. There was a discussion over what's going on in the other states. According to our analysis, over half of the states that actually have viable bear populations have or do allow the use of dogs for hunting bears. And the states that don't allow that also allow either trapping, spring seasons, or baiting, which is all currently banned in California. So, again, at the end of the day, we're going to have very limited management tools. So, again, we would request that you relook at this issue and perhaps take it up at another meeting. Thank you.
Cliff Hart.
Hi there, I'm Cliff Hart. I'm also a member of Humboldt Area Saltwater Anglers. Want to talk to you about the Pacific halibut issue, but a lot of it's been covered. Don't want to be repetitive. Just want to reiterate that it's very special fishery. I mean, ever since the salmon, the very poor or the reduced salmon season we had, we've effort shifted to halibut. People are catching 100-plus pounders yearly here. It's a major economic benefit for us to have that season. And 6,000 pounds from Brookings to California, that's seemed like a ridiculous number. We'll catch that in one weekend. So for the future of our kids and everything, we need some more numbers. So I appreciate your support and fighting and pushing, trying to get some effort more allocated to us. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Julie Cairns, followed by last speaker, Paul Weakland.
Good afternoon. My name is Julie Cairns, and I'm with the Redwood Empire Retriever Club here in Eureka, California. We have used the Eel River Wildlife Area for training, picnic trials, field trials, and hunting tests since this property was first obtained by Fish and Game in the late 1980s. Prior to that, we used these grounds for the same purposes when it was privately owned and known as Ocean Ranch. We've also used the Lake Earl Wildlife Area up in Crescent City for the same purposes. these properties are all falling into the category of Type C, And due to the size, remoteness, and lack of public use, it was obviously never necessary to designate a dog training area in these grounds. When we first had an opportunity to use these grounds, we were encouraged by Fish and Game to use them. These usage numbers were valued in the validation of funds and showed public use of these properties. Now, due to the proposed wording in 550 and 1 and 2, properties such as Eel River Wildlife Area would no longer be allowed because there is no designated dog training area. I would like to recommend that this language be changed to the following, or remove sentences 1 and 2 altogether from the section. In section 2, I would like to see this change to field trials may be allowed only on department lands with designated training areas or have been traditionally used for these purposes or were deemed appropriate with a special use permit and required a special use permit. I've been involved in honey test and field trials for 35 years and have been into events in every part of the state. And properties in this area are unique in their type, and they're also unique in that they're the only ones like this that have been used for field trials. So we would be directly affected by this language. We appreciate the department's continuing efforts to meet with the affected stakeholders to address problems with the proposed language. We would like to request consideration be given to our unique location and situation, and that appropriate rewarding or recategorization be considered. Thank you.
Paul Weakland.
Commissioners, Paul Weakland. Well, now the time has come to demonstrate that you have not falsely advertised these no fishing zones. We request that you lift the moratorium on the harvest of abalones south of San Francisco, particularly in San Francisco County, San Mateo County, Santa Cruz County, Monterey County, and San Luis Obispo County. The Fish and Game wardens say that over 200,000 abalones were poached last year off of this area, North Central Coast study region. So there's no longer a need or necessity to mismanage the abalone resource in these locations. We know that if you lift the moratorium, you have the power, the authority, the jurisdiction to do it immediately, and that all of the past regulations would then be enacted again. The most stringent, the numerous regulations, most anywhere in the world, most regulated fishery ever. We have suggested that we raise the size limit to 7 3/4 inches. Fish and Game says, no, don't need to do that. We've suggested to lessen the daily bag limit. The Fish and Game says, no. We got you down almost to bare bones as it is. So why not demonstrate how well that these no fishing zones work? Lift the moratorium on the harvest of abalones in these areas that are being heavily poached. You haven't stopped the poaching. This is like prohibition, right? Oh, we're going to take away alcohol from all of the citizens of the United States. It didn't work. Just like the prohibition on marijuana, it's not working. The prohibition on abalone harvesting in San Francisco counties, San Mateo County, Santa Cruz County, Monterey County, San Luis Obispo County is not working either. And the reasons for closing it were very well camouflaged and garbled. Oh, yes, it was your friends in aquaculture again. That's right. Want to buy some shares in an aquaculture pyramid? How about some stock in a Mariculture Ponzi Consortium? Well, it's not nice to fool with Mother Nature, but follow the money, and the trail leads where? The swindlers and cheats.
Thank you, Paul. Commissioners, that wraps up public forum. I recommend, Mr. Vice President, that we have the department do its presentation on 2A and 2B in series, and then take public comment, and then that would allow you to deliberate on both items at the end. Does that seem reasonable?
Good idea.
All right.
Thank you.
And with that, department, we have a presentation, quick presentation on 2A, which is the final certification of environmental document adoption of findings for proposed changes to Section 632 marine protected areas for the North Coast Study Region. Becky?
Great. Good afternoon, Vice President Sutton, commissioners, tribal members, RSG members, members of the public. Good afternoon to everyone. I am Becky Ota, the Habitat Conservation Program Manager for the Department of Fish and Game's Marine Region. And I am going to be providing a very brief overview on the California Environmental Quality Act, or CEQA, process for the North Coast MPAs in preparation for your review of the North Coast Study Region Final Environmental Impact Report, or EIR, FEIR, and the potential certification. I also have with me today, to aid in any questions you may have, Michael Stevenson and Jill Sunahara from Horizon Water and Environmental, the contractors for the CEQA document, and Susan Ashcraft of my staff, who was the lead person for the department in the process. That works. It worked. Just as a brief reminder, the roles and responsibilities in this process, the Fish and Game Commission, you, were the lead agency under CEQA, and you approve or certify the final EIR, which is what we're here for today. The Department of Fish and Game is the responsible agency for preparation of the CEQA document, and then the Horizon Water and Environment consultant hired to prepare that CEQA document. Also, another reminder, within the DEIR that the FEIR covers, was the no project alternative, which is required by CEQA, which is the continuation of the existing MPAs. It would avoid any potential impacts of proposed project and not result in benefits of the proposed project. In addition to that, per your request, the enhanced compliance alternative was also analyzed under CEQA, and basically the same general geographies for the MPA as the proposed project. There was a different approach to the incorporation of the tribal uses, increases in the levels of protection in several offshore areas, and overall would result in similar impacts as the proposed project. Briefly, for the CEQA process, there were four scoping meetings that occurred in September and October of 2011. We talked a little bit about that back in April and where they were held. They were held all on the North Coast, with one actually in Sacramento. There was then a 45-day public comment period, and to back up on the scoping meetings, the purpose of that was the comments received were used to help inform the development of that DEIR. Then there was a 45-day comment period that started March 1st. During that comment period, there were three public meetings in March and April, with the April meeting being your April discussion hearing on the North Coast here in Eureka. And then the comment period closed on April 16th, 2012. The final EIR was then prepared. It was also, once it was prepared, it was given on a 10-day notice to those public agencies who provided comments on the FEIR. It was also provided to libraries, and it's up on our website, I believe, now. So, in addition to that, the FEIR also contains the copies of, well, it contains copies of comments received, and it's required to basically list all of the individuals, organizations, and agencies that provided the comments, and along with that, the copies of all the comments received, including the transcript of those public meetings I mentioned earlier, specific responses to each comment, and then changes to the DEIR based on those comments and those responses. There were 106 comments that were received in the form of either letters, emails, or public or oral comments. The categories that emerged from those comments included the scope of the MLPA and regulatory authority, analysis of other activities in North Coast Study Region, adequacy or application of data gathered during the MLPA initiative process, the adequacy of the science standards used in the process, enforcement issues, natural constraints and baseline conditions. This is similar to the other activities that you dealt with in the South Coast. Levels of protection, and then a lot of comments on the proposed regulations that really weren't really pursuant to the CEQA document, but we did receive those, and those were forwarded on to our staff who are going to deal with that for you. There was no new analysis as a result of these comments. And as a result, there was no, the department believes, there's no significant adverse impact to the environment as a result of the project and therefore believes that the CEQA document is adequate and pursuant to CEQA. And that is it. I thank you very much.
Thank you, Becky. And I think Steve Wirtz from the department is going to give you an overview of the regulatory proposal 2B.
Good morning, commissioners, or good afternoon. My name is Steve Wirtz, and I supervise the Department of Fish and Game's Marine Protected Areas Project. Enclosed in your briefing materials is the initial statement of reason for the new and improved marine life protected areas in the North Coast Marine Life Protection Act study region. The purpose of this presentation is to provide an overview of the proposed project, also known as the preferred alternative, in the environmental impact report and the initial statement of reason, and I will provide highlights the sub-options in the proposed project. It's important to point out at this time that the proposed project incorporates all the guidance and recommendations that you have provided to the department, and any change to the options at this time will result in a re-notice of the initial statement of reason and recirculation of the environmental impact report. As you know, the North Coast Study Region ranges geographically from the California-Oregon border in Del Norte County down to Alder Creek near Point Arena in Mendocino County. It encompasses more than 1,000 square miles of state ocean waters, including ocean waters around offshore rocks. It also has about 640 miles of coastline. 5% of the study region is proposed in a marine protected area, in a reserve, 8% in a conservation area, and less than 1% in a state marine recreational management area or special closures. There's a total of 6 state marine reserves, 13 conservation areas, 1 state marine recreational management area, and 7 special closures. The proposed regulation includes sub-options. They include 4 boundary sub-options, 4 take sub-options, and 1 name and designation sub-option. These sub-options are based on department feasibility issues, input from the Marine Life Protection Act initiative staff, and stakeholders. I also wanted to point out this time administratively that in your briefing materials is a scorecard. It was very similar to what you used in the Southern California region. And following public comment today, you'll be taking vote, and it'll help you navigate through the process. We'll also project that scorecard on the screen so the public can follow along with you. To facilitate and orientate you where the marine protected areas are, I'm going to walk you through each of the protected areas along the coast and call out those that have sub-options. Pyramid Point is the northernmost marine protected area in the study region, followed by Point St. George Reef Offshore Conservation Area, the Southwest Seal Rock Special Closure, the Castle Rock Special Closure, the False Klamath Rock Special Closure, and the Reading Rock State Marine Reserve and Conservation Area. Within this section of the coastline, there is a boundary option at Pyramid Point Conservation Area, and there is a name change and designation change proposed at the Reading Rock and SMCA. This figure shows the Pyramid Point State Marine Conservation Area and the boundary options for the southern boundary. The Department of Fish and Game, during the scoping of the proposed regulation, had recommended moving the regional stakeholder proposal in option, which is option 2. Well, the proposal was option 1, and we're recommending back at that time to move the boundary down to Prince Island. And the reason is the proposed boundary here, shown here, splits a beach that's heavily used by beach anglers, and there's no major feature to identify that as a boundary. So following our feasibility guidelines of moving it to a prominent feature when one's available, we had recommended moving it to Prince Island. However, since then, one of our wildlife enforcement consultants went out and investigated each one of the boundaries where we have an option boundary options. And at this particular site, after talking to locals and going out to the site, we now recommend option one, because during his field investigation along this area here, it is very difficult to make an observation from one single point. It's hard to see people in these undulating beaches. So enforcement has recommended that we stay with option one. Also, south of that option, there is a Smith River Rancheria tribal lands, and this would avoid interacting with that tribe. This slide shows the Reading Rock State Marine Reserve and State Marine Conservation Area and the actual Reading Rock itself, which is located right up here. To my understanding, well, what happened here? Okay. During the planning process, it's my understanding that initially the regional stakeholders had incorporated Reading Rock in this cluster of marine protected areas. After having several meetings and meeting with the tribes and tribal communities, it was found that this was a significant spot. It would impede their ancestral and cultural practices, so they shifted the northern boundary about a third of a mile south of that rock. It's a fairly small rock, and it's an emergent rock, and it's very deep around the edges. With that said, there is a sub-option within your material that would change the Reading Rock Reserve to a conservation area if you were to allow tribal take in that reserve. If you were to allow tribal take, we'd have to change the designation from a reserve to a conservation area, and it would be called the Reading Rock Offshore Conservation Area. The conservation area that was adjacent to it would now have to be called the Onshore Reading Rock Conservation Area, so the public can discern between the difference. And once again, the offshore component would allow tribal activities for specific tribes, and then you have the onshore component. All right. Moving south of the Reading Rock cluster, we have the Samoa State Marine Conservation Area and the South Humboldt Bay State Marine Recreational Management Area. In this section of the coastline, we do have a boundary option in the SMIRMA. This figure shows the South Humboldt Bay SMIRMA, and on the left is option one. Option two was based on department feasibility guidelines. The option one, the eastern boundary shown here, has hanging corners, and it makes enforcement very difficult because you're uncertain about where those boundaries are. So the department, according to our feasibility guidelines, would like those boundaries lined up on a fixed position. So enforcement has recommended that we extend the boundary, actually we move the boundary down to this prominent point here and go due east to the College of the Redwoods exit, and then extend the southern boundary of option one shown here just directly east to this prominent point here. After conducting some field views of this particular SMIRMA, we realize that the public and enforcement can line up these points, and you can tell whether you're inside or outside of the SMIRMA. Moving down from Humboldt Bay, we've got the Sugarloaf Island Special Closure, the Cape Mendocino State Marine Reserve, the Matoll Canyon Reserve, Sea Lion Gulch Reserve, Big Flat State Marine Conservation Area, the Double Cone State Marine Conservation Area, and then the Rockport Rocks Special Closure and the Viscano Special Closure. Within this section of the coastline, we have a boundary issue or options at the Sea Lion Gulch, and we have take options at the Double Cone Rock SMCA. This slide here shows the Sea Lion Gulch State Marine Reserve, and the department recommends option two because it moves the northern boundary from option one up to the Punta Gorda Lighthouse, which is a very prominent feature, easily recognizable from land and sea. And we also recommend moving the southern boundary of option one up to Cooksey Creek, which is a major drainage that is very noticeable along the coastline for both beach anglers and vessels. The nautical charts for this area, call out Cooksey Creek on the chart, and also the navigation coast pilot that mariners use when traveling along the coast also calls out Cooksey Creek as a prominent feature to look for when you're traveling along the coastline here. In contrast, in option one, the northern boundary does align with some rocks right offshore, but those are not as prominent as having the lighthouse as a northern boundary. And in the south here, this is set up at a nondescript. There's no geological features to identify the southern boundary. You'd only be able to find it if you had a handheld GPS. Moving down to the double cone conservation area shown here, option A is to retain the proposed regulations, which allows commercial and recreational take of Dungeness crab and salmon. Option B would add the recreational take from shore only of cabazon, rockfish by hook and line, abalone by hand, surf perch by hook and line, and surf smelt by dip net or cast net. Moving down the coast to the southernmost portion of the study region, we have the 10-mile State Marine Reserve, the 10-mile Beach State Marine Conservation Area, and the 10-mile estuary clustered together. Below that, we have the McCarricker State Marine Conservation Area just above Fort Bragg, and this is an existing protected area. We've got the Cabrillo State Marine Reserve, which is an existing marine protected area. Just below Mendocino, or above it, we've got the Russian Gulch Conservation Area, which is also an existing marine protected area, the Big River Estuary Conservation Area, and then the Van Dam State Marine Conservation Area, which is an existing one. And finally, the northernmost or southernmost conservation area and MPA in this study region is the Navarro River Estuary. Within this portion of the coastline, we have a boundary options at the 10-mile beach and take options at the Big River Estuary and the Navarro River Estuary. This figure shows the 10-mile beach conservation area, and the option is for the southern boundary. In this particular situation, we are recommending option two, because in option one, the southern boundary bisects this large sandy beach. There is no identifiable features to let someone know that they are in or out of the MPA at that end. You would have to have a handheld navigation device like a GPS. The only alternative, and it matches the feasibility guidelines, is to move that boundary to some spot that is easily recognizable. The best solution is down the beach at this spot here at the Inglenook Creek. The Inglenook Creek is a seasonal creek. When you walk down the beach, if you did not look eastward, you might walk by it. But it's because it's about 75 yards off the beach, but it has the stream bed itself and the vegetation, and enforcement felt that this would be a better position to be able to enforce the MPA. They felt people would be a little confused with the southern boundary in option one. So it's more enforceable and meets the department's feasibility guidelines. The Big River, this slide represents the Big River SMCA take options. The proposed option A is to retain the take regulations, which allow waterfowl hunting and Dungeness crab by recreational anglers. Option B would add the recreational take of surf perch by hook and line from shore only. And finally, the Navarro River State Marine Conservation Area. Option A would retain the proposed regulation, which is allowing the existing waterfowl hunting. And B would add the recreational take of salmonids by hook and line consistent with the salmonid regulations in Section 14, or Title 14, Section 7.5. In closing, as you know, there are three additional new provisions in the proposed regulation to be added to Title 14, Section 632, that defines tribal take by any federally recognized tribal member taking living marine resources in specific marine protected areas. There's a definition for shore fishing that we borrowed from the groundfish regulations in Title 14. And lastly, there is a description of the exemption for a use of float tube or some similar device to take abalone while fishing from shore. That concludes the department's overview of the proposed regulation. I'm available for any questions that you may have. Following your questions, the executive director of the Fish and Game Commission is available to walk you through some outstanding tribal correspondence that has occurred since your last meeting and bring you up to speed on those issues.
Any questions for Steve?
I do. Vice President. Steve, thanks for the good overview. I think I want to correct one thing because we went over that in detail. Because we may get to voting, it's going to go pretty quick. So on decision one, isn't it the department's view to go with option two? I think you might have said option one. On the pyramid point?
Actually, originally that was our recommendation when we were scoping out the proposed project was to go with option two because it moved down to a major geological feature that people could recognize. But a few weeks ago, we sent out an enforcement representative from LED, and he went to each one of these protected areas. And in that particular one, after scouting out the bluff and the situation, he went.
So you're in alignment with the RNCP on that one?
That's correct. We're withdrawing option two, I think.
Good. Thank you. I just wanted to clarify. Thank you.
All right, then, Commissioners, I will. The last three decisions you'll have to make, other than the nine presented by Steve, are a result of your consideration from the tribes for the tribes being allowed to continue currently legal fishing activities in Pyramid Point, Point St. George, and Reading Rock. And you had requested tribes to produce a factual record to back those claims up, and they were due back last summer. We did get six factual records, and unfortunately, I misunderstood some of the other letters we received from some of the other tribes kind of hitching their wagon to some of the other tribal proposals. So since that time, your current package under option A for those three areas has a list of tribes, and the territorial tribal tribes have pointed out that I made some errors. So this section allows you to clean that up. So, for example, in Pyramid Point, you have five tribes listed currently, and the Smith River Tribe is asking that they be the only named tribe for Pyramid Point as being the only appropriate federally recognized tribe to use that area. So if you choose to go along with that, you would be under option B, identifying Smith River, and then doing a no change for the others and essentially removing them. So I will help you walk through those when we get to those. So if there's no questions on that. Oh, I point St. George.
George,
I did. I thought. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I know what you're asking now. Slow. For Pyramid Point, Smith River's Rancheria is asking they be the only tribe recognized for Pyramid Point, SMCA. At Point St. George Reef Offshore, SMCA, Elk Valley Rancheria and Smith River Rancheria be the only two recognized tribes. And then for Reading Rock, SMCA, the Yurok Tribe of the Yurok Reservation be the only recognized tribe for those three. Thank you, Adriana.
We have three options now, you're saying. We can have the tribes listed, all tribes, or list out specific tribes.
No, not all tribes. That's not an option.
All tribes listed.
You're correct. Thank you.
Right. So all tribes listed, or we're going to point out the tribes.
Correct. Or no change total. That is the other option. So with that, we could take public comment. You have 30 speaker cards. It is 2:36. We will take public comments on both A and B.
For purposes of timing, I think we should combine them. Public comment on both.
How much time?
Let's start with 2 minutes. But again, we're going to be pressed for time. We'll lose a quorum, so we need to get through this. And let's start with 2 minutes for each.
And
speaker.
With that, if again, don't need to repeat what other speakers have said. And this funky little black box is the timer. When it says zero time left means you need to stop talking, and there's also lights on the dais. Yellow means you got 30 seconds. Red means you need to stop. So with that, Priscilla Hunter, followed by Dale Miller, followed by David Genshaw. Yeah, and please line up so we can move through you efficiently.
My glasses on. Good afternoon. My name is Priscilla Hunter. I'm a member of the Coyote Valley Band of Pomo Indians and the chairwoman for the Intertribal Cinco and Wilderness Tribes. I proudly representing this intertribal organization today, which is comprised of these fairly recognized tribes of Mendocino, Lake in Mendocino and Lake Counties. Caddo, Coyote Valley, Hopland, Panolaville, Potter Valley, Redwood Valley, Robinson, Round Valley, Scotts Valley, and Sherwood Valley. The Sinkeon Council strongly supports the proposed regulations as it applies to the North Coast Southern Region, bioregion. Support among the tribes that are in our area is very strong for the continuation of our, I'm going to bring it up closer to see it here, continuation of our traditional tribal marine use as authorized through the proposed regulations. As you know, the Sinkeon Council composed of 10 fairly recognized tribes, together with 8 other fairly recognized tribes, a total of 18 tribes in the southern bioregion, will benefit from the proposed regulation as drafted. These 18 tribes will have continued access to traditional gather, harvest, and fish for marine species in all 6 of the state marine conservation areas proposed for the southern bioregion without additional restrictions. We ask you to take this final step in the MLPA process for our region and adopt the proposed regulations without changes to the MPAs in the southern bioregion. The proposed regulation is the best option for meeting the goal of ensuring that tribes in the southern bioregion will be allowed to continue traditional non-commercial harvesting, fishing in this portion of ancestral territories. If you adopt the proposed regulations, history will record this day as a turning point in the relationship between California Indian tribes and the state of California. This is a foundation for a better relationship, and we pledge our support for working together to make it even stronger. Many people have contributed to this effort. We would like to mention several who had special roles. We thank each of you for listening and responding to our concerns a little bit more. Yeah, we deserve recognition for staying the course with us through difficult times. We thank Secretary John Laird and for his vision, commitment, and leadership in bringing us to this day. We thank Sankey for his commitment to working with us to resolve difficult issues. Ken Wiseman, congratulations, I say. I'm very proud of him. Was particularly thankful to helpful to the tribes and the regional stakeholders.
You really
science
need to
advisory team, Blue Ribbon Task Force. I'm very almost finished. We are very appreciative of the hard work conducted by these 3 MLPA initiative groups. We extremely wish to thank the tribes and local communities for supporting us and helping us reach the fulfillment of our prayers for a good conclusion to this process and healing both for our ocean and our people. Thank you. On behalf of the Sinkeon Councils, our member tribes, and the future generations of Indian people, we thank everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Priscilla.
Let's try to stick to 2
yeah,
minutes.
If we don't,
we'll have to go to 1, and nobody wants to do that.
Chairman Dale Miller.
I already talked to you today, so I'm going to get you some time back. Thank you.
Thank you very much. David Genshaw, followed by Jack Matz, followed by Ruthie Maloney. And please line up. We're going to start cutting you off here, because otherwise they're not going to vote today.
David Jensaw, Sr., and to not to be redundant, I know you guys heard what I had spoken, and but I didn't see up here False Klamath Cove, but I'm hoping that we will have some dialogue and we will be able to work on that for our people. It's a very the area is right there, you know, and our people have used that, like I said, from the beginning of time, and we'll continue to use it. But I'm more hoping that we don't have to go through that with our people. So think about it, and hopefully we can work it out without confrontation. Thank you.
Thank you. Jack Matz, followed by Ruthie Maloney. Come on, folks, please line up, followed by John Corbett, followed by Alicia McQuill.
I'm Jack Matz, North District Representative for the Yurok Tribal Council. When you guys were mentioning all your rocks and MLPA areas, you never mentioned False Klamath Cove. And like my counterpart said there, if you guys implement things the way you plan on doing them, you're going to have a confrontation with a lot of elders, and including myself, and we wish not to do that. So do the right thing. Thank you.
All right, Ruthie Maloney, John Corbett. Ruthie, I guess you're gone.
John
Alicia
Corbett.
McQuill. You're talking, John?
I wanted to mention Ruthie Maloney's in the restroom, so when she returns, I hope.
Why don't you start talking then, please?
Okay, 1801. You already got 6 seconds on me.
Talk
John
faster.
Corbett, 1801, Ocean Drive. I wanted to comment specifically on the EIR. I have handouts. Essentially, first, we want to make a reservation of all rights, including all prior concerns expressed for the draft and the final EIR. I want to thank Secretary Brown, the Commission, Director Bonham, and Fish and Game staff for moving us a long ways forward. I do want to say that after this decision, there's a lot of hard work to make it work. We wanted to note Assemblyman Chesbrough said all reserve areas should allow for Native American rights. I want to comment very specifically on one assumption of the levels of protection that was adopted by the Science Advisory Team. We agree with a lot of the Science Advisory Team work, but not that particular assumption. In many parts of the MLPA process and the SAT were peer-reviewed, the levels of protection was not. Our principal concern is with the one assumption that has the recreational take defined as the maximum amount allowed by state and federal law. One, we note this is a policy, not really a science proposition. We note it was not peer-reviewed. We note it's not susceptible to scientific proof, and we think it violates best available science procedures in two ways. One, the National Academy of Sciences protocols were cited in the EIR. We appreciated that, and we liked the citation, and we agree with it, but they only cited the provisions they complied with. Similarly, they mentioned best available science under the Magnuson Act, and the courts have consistently thrown out models that have a predictability value of less than 50% under that act and under best available science. And lastly, many of the projections are impossible to have achieved. We want to thank you for your work. We did want to put these reservations into the record, and thank you.
Thank you, John. Alicia McQuinn, Hawk Rosales, and then Ruthie.
Hello, Commissioners. My name is Alicia McQuillan, and I'm the Marine Resources Coordinator for the Yurok Tribe. Thank you for hosting your meeting here in the area, which your regulations will affect. We thank you for that. I would like to make clear that the Yurok Tribe makes a full and complete reservation of rights with its participation in this process. The Yurok Tribe has submitted a considerable amount of information for the record, but these comments, I'd like to focus on the options you have before you and the Yurok support of the adoption of some of those options. And the slide you have, or the handouts you have in front of you, and the slide here reflect the options that we support. For Redding Rock, Tribal Option 1, reclassification for the proposed regulations from an SMR to an SMCA. We believe the change from an SMR to an SMCA is a small amount of the conservation value. It's a limited change, and we think this would go a long way in healing the relationship between the state of California and the tribes. And we believe the natural constraints of the northern bioregion support the protection of this very area. And the northern natural reserves ought to be considered along with the array. We also believe this designation as an SMCA will bring the arrays of MPAs into conformance with the existing Memorandum of Understanding that the Yurok Tribe has with the Bureau of Land Management to be a co-steward of Redding Rock, which is just adjacent to that MPA. And this would also be consistent with the canoe-going culture of the Yurok Tribe in that these uses are part of the baseline conditions. There's no increase by your change of designation from an SMR to an SMCA. That activity is already included in the baseline. And also, we'd like a no-change option for False Klamath Rock seasonal special closure. This area was proposed at the last minute of a Blue Ribbon Task Force meeting at the end of that process. And it was proposed with the understanding at the time that tribes would have access and take in the area. I'd like to make that very clear. We believe that it was not properly vetted with the tribes, and it deserves due consideration with the parties involved. Thank you.
Thank you. Hawk Rosales, Ruthie Maloney, and Russ Crabtree. All right.
Commissioners, good afternoon. I'm just going to read a short excerpt from my statement and then provide your staff with a package of copies of
Could
our
you
statement.
Repeat your name real quickly?
Hawk Rosales, Intertribal Sinkyone Wilderness Council Executive Director.
Thank you.
The Sinkyone Council thanks you for all of your hard work and all the parties involved all these last many months, and we are looking forward to a historic vote on this very important issue today. For the southern bioregion, we support the MPAs with no changes as they are now proposed. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Hawk. Is Ruthie back yet? There.
Good afternoon. My name is Ruthie Maloney, and I am a Yurok tribal member, and I work for the Yurok tribe in the legal department as a paralegal. I'm here today just basically to say that we're glad that the process is moving on, and we're looking forward to working with MPA Monitoring Enterprises on the next phase with the funding. And we have been collaborating with HSU, which is Humboldt State University, and the Redwood National State Parks on a few projects for the upcoming research. And we're looking forward to creating a baseline study for the North Coast, as we are a very unique coastline. And as a traditional gatherer and hunt and fisher, and it's just very important that we continue to be able to practice our traditional uses as we have since time immemorial. I thank you guys for coming here and working through the process, and I hope we work through this and continue collaborating with other state agencies. Thank you.
Thank you. Russ Crabtree, followed by Mark Henley, followed by Jim Martin.
Good afternoon, Vice President Sutton, Commissioners. I'm Russ Crabtree. I'm the Tribal Administrator for Smith River Rancheria. I've been involved in this process since 2009. I was also a regional stakeholder. I'm providing correspondence, and I would like to just state for the record that the way that Sankey has described it as far as Pyramid Point, Point St. George, the boundary adjustment in Option 1, Smith River Rancheria supports that as described by Sankey Mastriff, and I've outlined it in the letter specifically, that at Pyramid Point there should be only one recognized tribe with Imperial Point. That should be Smith River. Option B in your packet, list two, which is Elk Valley. We provided through the DIR process, the ISOR process, correspondence from the tribes within those areas, understanding that that jurisdictional area, Pyramid Point's well within the ancestral territories of Smith River, and the only tribe that should be listed in Pyramid Point should be the Smith River Rancheria. In addition to that, the joint jurisdiction is shared at Point St. George. If the option two, which seems to be off the table, which I hope that you vote for option one, Prince Island is 14 acres. 14 acres is in federal trust. We've provided you letters from the Bureau of Indian Affairs, which stipulated that. The jurisdiction of that is under the sole jurisdiction of Smith River Rancheria. I do want to close real quick, because I know time is of the essence here. But I do want to say that we are not at the end. We are at the beginning of a good relationship with the Department of Fish and Game as we manage the ecosystem. And when I say the ecosystem, I'm not talking about the MPAs. The MPAs are there, whether it's the conservation area, whatever the designation may be. But we are a partner. We're looking for partnerships with the state. We have the equal responsibility to the tribal citizens, as well as to you have the responsibility to manage those areas too. So we should do this in partnership. We should share resources, and we should work together. With those, I also will always close, and you've heard tribes do this consistently, that we are not under any circumstances ceding the rights of Smith River Rancheria by participating in this process. And I thank you very much.
Thank you, Russ. Mark Henley, Jim Martin, and William Lemos.
Hi again, Mr. Vice President, members of the Commission, Director Monum. I just wanted to thank the Commission as well as Department of Fish and Game staff for working with us on the waterfowl hunting issues. There were a number of estuaries and bays that were threatened with closures, and you guys have worked it out with some appropriate regulatory language to protect hunting in those areas. This will really help to make sure that our waterfowl hunting traditions are maintained up on the North Coast, and will also help to reduce crowding on some of the existing public areas. My understanding is next you're going to be looking at San Francisco Bay, San Pablo Bay in the future. Of course, there's massive waterfowl hunting issues there. We hope to, again, work with you very cooperatively to try to protect hunting in those areas. So, again, thank you for your help, and look forward to working with you in the future on that.
Thank you. Jim Martin, followed by William Lemos and Roberta Cordova.
Jim Martin, representing the Recreational Fishing Alliance. I wanted to speak in favor of the option that would allow abalone diving at Double Cone Rock. And I would also support, again, option one at 10 Mile State Marine Conservation Area. I don't agree that there's any landmark there, certainly not that you can see from the ocean. So that would be a huge increase to already large MPA cluster and a big impact to Fort Bragg. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. William Lemos.
Thank you, Commissioners. Bill Lemos, Mendocino Abalone Watch, NRDC consultant and regional stakeholder member. I'd like to have a couple of figures in front of you before you make the decision on the Double Cone Rock. On the abalone issue, Mendocino Coast is being overrun by abalone pickers. As an Abalone Watch member with toes in the tide pool, we can hardly keep up with the pressure that is on our abalone reserves right now. And the figures that I'd like to give you are 20, over 20 actually, 11-inch abalone were taken last year in 2011. The pressure is tremendous to find big abalone. And a half a million is a conservative estimate of the number of abalone that have been taken in the North Coast region from San Francisco Bay northward. That's a very conservative estimate. So we have a tremendous amount of pressure. We have a lot of people that are coming up from the Bay Area at this point, especially during these low tides, as I witnessed yesterday. And they're also bringing their fishing tackle with them, and they're tromping on the tide pools, and they're going fishing, and they're taking a lot of abalone home. So at the Double Cone Rock issue, I would strongly urge you to look at this as a place where there are only going to be a couple of places where abalone is not allowed. That would be the very small Point Cabrillo Reserve and the 10-mile reserve, and I strongly encourage you to look at what the regional stakeholders proposed as being an important part of the southern part of the bioregion there, and keep that Double Cone Rock in option A as the preferred alternative as the regional stakeholders design. Thank you very much. Appreciate you.
Thank you. Roberta, followed by Judy Tremper, followed by Autumn Bremer.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Thank you for being here. Thank you, the Wiat people, for having us be here on their land. I formerly sat on the Blue Ribbon Task Force for the North Coast and also as a regional stakeholder for the South Coast. And I don't want to advise you here. We've already put forth our advice, and I'm very pleased at how well you took it to heart and really listened to the people here who know this place and really listened to the tribes. And I think that one of the most outstanding things that has happened out of this process is that the state is listening and taking seriously their government-to-government relationship with the tribes. And I just want to congratulate all of you here for supporting that effort, and especially Sankey for listening very carefully and taking that forward. I think that's all I want to say. Just thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Roberta, if I may, thank you for coming all the way up here.
Yeah, it was a long way.
As my neighbor.
Yes, right.
It's good to see you.
Every time you've been in Santa Barbara, I've been out of town, so here I am. Thank you.
Thank you. Judy Tremper, Autumn Bremer, and Carol Vandermeer.
Good afternoon, commissioners. I'm Judy Tremper from Fort Bragg, representing Pacific Rim Seafood, and Tom Tremper, an RSG member. The concept of the MLPA arrays were to establish a chain of closed arrays from along the coast of California, where larvae from marine creatures from one area will reach the next area, creating a chain that will reward us with a healthy, vibrant ocean. The problem with all chains is when you have a weak link and then add to that strain from competition in closing one area, it causes ocean users to shift pressure to the remaining open areas. The weak link in this process is sea urchins. Sea urchins left uncontrolled will overpopulate, and the result is a sea urchin barren, where only sea urchins remain, and the chain of larvae from one area to the next is broken. We on the North Coast saw this problem and put adaptive management for sea urchins into some of our areas to study and monitor the population of sea urchins so as to give us a tool to regulate the population growth of these sea urchins inside of our areas and not cause urchin barrens that break our chain of larvae from one area reaching the other. What I would like to ask of you is to help us keep our ocean healthy. We on the North Coast, RSG, spent long days, weeks, months, closely examining our area using the science given us and, most important, the local knowledge formed from lifetimes of using and protecting it. Please don't change what we know to be right. Also, I would ask to keep the chain strong by implementing adaptive management for sea urchin in all closed area in California. I know firsthand by diving in some of these areas there will be urchin barrens. In the Channel Island closures, they are already urchin barrens there. Please keep the chain strong. Please keep the chain safe. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Autumn Bremer, Carol Vandermeer, and Ada Stevenson.
Hello, Commission. I'm Autumn Bremer. I'm representing sea urchin divers out of Fort Bragg. And Christopher and I are just here to remind you that this is our family's livelihood. And all of our extended family are fishermen. So please keep that in mind as you make your decisions that this is going to be affecting families. And the RSG worked many months and days and hours on this project, and they took everyone's livelihood into consideration. So thank you.
Thank you. Carol Vandermeer, Ada Stevenson, Monique Sunoku.
Okay. Hi, my name's Carol Vandermeer, and I'm the Executive Director of Friends of the Dunes, a local nonprofit dedicated to conserving the natural diversity of coastal environments. Friends of the Dunes has a 30-year history of involving the community in educational walks and programs along our coast, including the shores of the proposed Samoa and South Bay MPAs. Establishing MPAs in our area is consistent with our goal of inspiring all ages to learn about and care for diverse coastal resources. Our region has worked hard to develop a unified MPA proposal that includes enhancing recreation, education, and research opportunities and has the support of a wide variety of interests. While the North Coast waters may be in better shape than some parts of our state, we support the establishment of MPAs in our area that can boost fish size and numbers and safeguard our area against future impacts. I am asking the Commission to adopt the proposed project and respect the original stakeholder intent when looking at the sub-options and allowed uses stakeholders originally designed. I want to thank the commissioners for the opportunity to speak before you today and for working on protecting marine areas in California. Thank you.
Thank you. Ada Stevenson, Monique Sanuki, and Paul Weekland.
Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Ada Stevenson. I'm a traditional fishing and gathering person on the North Coast. The adoption of the proposed regulation developed with broad-based support from the North Coast Regional Stakeholders Group and the Blue Ribbon Task Force promotes traditional non-commercial fishing, gathering, and harvesting within designated state marine conservation areas. The southern bioregion marine protected areas should stand as is and not be redesigned nor modified. The enhanced compliance alternative should not be considered as it places limitations on tribal take in designated SMCAs. The proposed regulations developed by the North Coast Regional Stakeholder Group determined due to the unique standing and traditional uses must be separated from recreational category. In doing so, the continued take by tribal non-commercial use will not be diminished. One of the fundamental stewardship principles addresses human impact on the delicate marine and freshwater ecosystem by illustrating the integration of traditional stewardship knowledge to enhance marine sustainability. Conservation and protection of natural resources embrace both traditional core values and Western science-based goals. The adoption of proposed MLPA regulation acknowledges the unique tribal subsistence and interdependency with the ocean and shoreline foods. Traditional tribal people have practiced traditional cultural interaction with the ocean since the beginning of mankind. Institutional thought processes and science does not grasp the interrelated habitat and human dependency. This is another principle that has been transferred since the beginning of time among California's first people. We urge the Commission to adopt the preferred proposal regulation, thus creating true collaboration and partnership with the California tribes. And I, too, as a traditional gathering and fishing person, will not and have not ever succeeded or surrendered any of my tribal fishing and gathering rights here in California. Thank you for your consideration, and thanks for your attention.
Thank you. Monique Sanoki.
I work for the Wiat Tribal Conservation Tribal Historic Preservation Officer, and I want to ask the commission who is familiar with the United Nations Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Can I see a raise of hands? I did submit this document in Sacramento last year, so you do need to read this document. It is binding. It's an international national law. And the reason why, I'm going to read a couple of the articles to you pertain to what we're talking about here today. Article 8, 1, Indigenous peoples and individuals have the right not to be subjected to forced assimilation or destruction of their culture. Number 2, states shall provide effective mechanisms for prevention of and redress for, such as B, any action which has the aim or effect of dispossessing them of their lands, territories, or resources. Any permits, limits, or closures will dispossess Indigenous peoples of our cultural rights and responsibilities. Article 11, states shall provide redress through effective mechanisms, which may include restitution developed in conjunction with Indigenous peoples with respect to their cultural, intellectual, religious, and spiritual property taken without their free, prior, informed consent or in violation of their laws, traditions, and customs. Let's be honest, this process has not been given us the free, informed, and prior consent. Consent means that there is no coercion, no disrespect, no discrimination, and tribes have had this coercive process in having to negotiate our tribal rights and responsibilities to you today. So please familiarize yourself with this because it will be used for the tribes and the native communities that are subsistence fishing and hunting, and we will bring it to the commission. You don't have the money to even follow through with the MLPA. You certainly don't have the money to follow through with lawsuits. Wachlau.
Thank you. Paul Weakland, followed by Stefan Coleman and Matt Myas. Go ahead, Paul.
Commissioners, Paul Weakland. Well, if these no fishing zones, the no economic zones that you've enacted here are not been falsely advertised, we can go back and we can increase the seasons, we can increase the daily bag limits, we can reduce the size of the species taken in these adjacent areas. That's if you have not falsely advertised these no fishing zones. So I would like to urge you to increase the seasons, increase the bag limits, and reduce the size limits of the fish and mollusks in these areas so that we can harvest appropriately and make up for these closed areas. That's if they work like you say they do. I still believe it's like a new religion. It's only going to work if you really, really believe it works. If you don't believe it, it's not going to work.
Thank you, Paul. Stefan Coleman, Matt Myas, and Brandy Easter.
Good afternoon. Stephen Coleman, Wiat Tribe Environmental Director. And first, on behalf of the tribe, I'd like to welcome you to Wiat territory. And we'd like to strongly encourage the commission to accept the proposal, especially regarding Humboldt Bay, South Humboldt Bay area, as option one. Although the Wiat Tribe was not given a seat at the RSG table, we worked very closely with RSG members and other stakeholders who I'd like to thank at this time for keeping us connected and in the loop with all the proceedings to arrive at a negotiated, agreed upon design for the South Humboldt Bay area. This was agreed upon by many stakeholders, and to change it at this time would put all of that hard work to naught and also remove the support of the Wiat Tribe for the entire process. And furthermore, I'd also like to encourage you, once this is adopted, to truly pursue co-management, real co-management agreements for the areas within the tribe's ancestral territories. Thank you very much for all your hard work and for your support.
Thank you. Matt Myas, Brandy Easter, Rick Copeland.
I don't have a comment. You can skip to the next
one. Okay, thank you. Brandy Easter, Rick Copeland, Caitlin Gaffney.
Commissioners, Brandy Easter, regional stakeholder member, and I just want to emphasize that every boundary that the stakeholders all agree to is extremely important. And while I appreciate the department's recommendations, we'd like you to please adopt the unified proposal as the regional stakeholder members presented to you. And thank you for your continued support of our unified proposal.
Thank you, Brandy. Rick Copeland, followed by Caitlin Gaffney and Aaron Newman.
Good afternoon, Commissioners, Vice President Sutton. My name is Rick Copeland. I'm here representing Wilderness Unlimited. As you know, Wilderness Unlimited is the largest private camping, fishing, hunting, and conservation group on the West Coast. We manage, well, we represent 5,000 families of different economic and ethnic backgrounds. We have 100 ranches, each one managed independently for thousands of acres. In Humboldt and Mendocino counties alone, we have 14 ranches encompassing 100,000 acres, each managed separately. We have only one property in the entire program that's on the coastline. It's been managed with the for abalone access and fishing access is all it's ever been used for. The Soper Company and Wilderness Unlimited entered in a conservation agreement 25 years ago, or longer than that, that we've been enforcing for years. It controls the take, controls the access. To build on what Mr. Lima said earlier, in the abalone Mendocino Land Watch, they cannot see this area. We've been the one providing the security. Your own game wardens will tell you that. Because of the geographic structure, we have the eyeballs on it. We haven't been able to control vessels, however. It can only be better on the proposed option B that's now only going to allow shore access. I want to thank the staff for coming up with that option. is clearly a win-win. Remember, in Stockton 2 years ago, Mr. Limo said this is the linchpin property. It provided great habitat, limited access, etc. He forgot to point the reason why Wilderness Unlimited and the Soper Company have been the controlling factor all these years. Lastly, CEQA agrees. Option B and Option A have the same level of protection. There is no reason for you not to support Option B. We want to thank you for hearing us. Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you, Rick. Caitlin Gaffney, Aaron Newman, Jim Clark.
Good afternoon. Caitlin Gaffney with Ocean Conservancy. Been at each one of these final hearings for the MLPA over the last several years. The Central Coast hearing, I had an adorable baby in arms like the one you just saw, and that baby's about to start kindergarten in September. So it's been a long haul. I just want to note the truly historic nature of the decision before you today, both in terms of what you are considering, adoption of the first comprehensive marine protected area network in the United States, and then also the how. The fact that California has developed this network of marine protections based on the best available science, based on some of the best scientists in the world and their input, but also, I think really significantly, by looking to the local people who know the coast best and arguably care about it most to figure out the details of how to appropriately design marine protected areas that will work for their communities. So I would like to voice my support, as you've heard from many others here today, for the unified proposal for options one, all of options one, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Caitlin. Aaron Newman, Jim Clark, Beth Werner.
Thank you all for coming. I'm Aaron Newman, First Division Harbor Commissioner for Humboldt Bay Harbor Recreation and Conservation District and a former stakeholder for the North Coast region. I would like to express for the district and myself the support, as very well stated by Assemblyman Chesbro, for the unified array from the stakeholder group, and to pledge the support of the district in any implementation problems such as the hanging corners in the South Bay Smyrna. I'd also like to invite those of you that are here to come to a celebration of our community's unity being held by the stakeholders tonight at the Eureka Women's Club at 6 o'clock. Thank you.
Thank you. Jim Clark, Beth Werner, and Catherine Coleman.
Good afternoon, commissioners. I'm Jim Clark, representing Redwood Region Audubon Society, and speaking on behalf of Chet Organ, our conservation chairperson. Our Redwood Region Audubon Society represents approximately 850 members in Humboldt and Delano counties. Our mission is to act to promote wise, balanced, responsible, and ethical use of natural systems on a local, national, and global scale, and to protect the biotic and abiotic components of local, national, and global natural systems. Within the auspices of our missions, we urge you to adopt at your June 6th meeting the proposed project as described in the draft Environmental Impact Report for the Marine Life Protection Act, MLPA. We are proud to promote five important bird areas encompassing 395,000 acres in the area served by our small chapter between Oregon border and Shelter Cove. Our chapter has been working closely with the Bureau of Land Management, California's National Monument, and our designated Trinidad Rocks Important Bird Area that protects nesting habitats of California species of special concern, fork-tailed storm petrel, Cassin's auklet, and tufted puffin. We urge protection through the MLPA process of the Trinidad Rocks area, especially Flatiron Rock, Green Rock and Puffin Rock, and rocks off Gouda Point that host local nesting habitat for these species. Unfortunately, these areas were not adopted as protected areas under the MLPA. Castle Rock, near Crescent City, as part of El Doral North Coast IVA, and is included in this project as a special closure area. We urge the Commission to adopt, without further delay, this MLPA for us and our children's children. Although it does not fulfill all of our expectation, we have worked hard with our community to come to an agreement on these areas. Thank you.
Thank you. Beth Werner, Beep and myself. Beth, Warner, Catherine Coleman, Anna Weinstein.
Hi, my name is Beth Warner. I'm the executive director of Humboldt Bay Keeper, and I'm here today to thank you for your hard work and thank my community for doing the same. It's really unique, as you know, I've heard before. Specifically, Humboldt Bay is a MPA we are concerned with. I've had the opportunity to speak with the Harbor District leaders. You heard from one of the commissioners. Option one is the best option. The second option doesn't offer more of a benefit as far as conservation goes. So if we can work together with the Harbor District to mark those boundaries, I think that would be the best thing for Humboldt Bay and for our community. All option ones are the best option for our community. Thank you.
Thank you, Catherine. And I will flog staff for not letting me know your name was in the stack. Sorry about that.
Hi, my name is Catherine Kuhlman, and I wanted to say good morning, good afternoon, excuse me, to Chairman, the Commission, and to staff. I am both the new Deputy Secretary for Oceans at Resources, as well as serving as the Executive Director for the Ocean Protection Council. And while I'm new to both of these roles, I have very deep ties to water quality issues in this particular region. And in my mind, I'm hoping for an adoption today, and that will make this an absolutely historic moment. John Laird noted that this is a great day for California's ocean and coastal resources, and with an affirmative vote, you will complete the nation's first statewide open coast system of marine protected areas, strengthening California's ongoing commitment to conserving marine life for future generations. Through the process, you will have also established the first ever special designation allowing tribes to continue ancestral fishing on the North Coast. As you well know, the process has been challenging. We have learned a lot and acknowledge we have much more to learn. There are both policy questions and scientific hypotheses that need to be framed and tested as we move forward with implementation. The Ocean Protection Council and the Resources Agency, Secretary Laird, and myself are committed to working in collaboration with you, the commissioners, DFG, the community, and particularly the tribes. Thank you.
Ms. Coleman, thank you for being here. I didn't realize we would have such a high-ranking official from the state here today. Just wanted to congratulate you on your position and say we're looking forward to working with you as well, especially those of us, the two of us that chair the Marine Committee for the Commission.
If I may, I wanted to reiterate the remarks of my fellow co-chair of the Marine Resources Committee. It stunned me to see you walking up to the dais there. I did not realize you were going to be here today. Your reputation significantly precedes you, and thank you for coming.
Thank you very much for the kind words.
Thank you. Anna Weinstein, Abby Queen, and Jennifer Savage.
Good afternoon, commissioners and staff. I'm here on behalf of Mendocino Coast and National Audubon, collectively with about 55,000 members. We're very happy to be here to support the proposed project and the local community. Audubon was represented on the stakeholder group by David Jensen, and I was a participant on the special closures work group. The proposed project, while not meeting science guidelines, will go far to preserve the legacy here. We oppose any modification to the proposed project that would weaken the network relative to science guidelines. Regarding False Klamath Rock, with respect to the previous speaker, this site was not a last-minute addition. It was on the table from the beginning. It's a globally important bird area, and the Special Closures Work Group did have tribal representation, so we would please like that to remain on the network. Thank you very much. We urge the Commission to adopt the proposed project. That's options one across the board without further modification. Thank you.
Thank you. Abby Queen, followed by Jennifer Savage, Karen Garrison, and Daniel Rocky.
Should be getting a little handout, looks like this. My name is Abby Queen. I live in Petrolia. It's on the division of the northern and southern bioregions, so it's kind of right in the middle. And I'll be talking about agenda item 2B, specifically about the proposed change of the Sea Lion Gulch SMR's northern border from Sea Lion Rock up to the Punta Gorda Lighthouse. A group of volunteers from Petrolia have been working to represent the interests of our community in the MLPA process since there was no stakeholder representing our area. Our group designed the current North Coast Study Region Array's backbone of high-level protection SMRs,
These are Cape Mendocino, Matol Canyon offshore, and Sea Lion Gulch. As the MOPA process forged ahead, we adjusted our design at the RSG meetings. Then back in Petrolio, we'd stand around with maps in the store or the post office, which are the same thing, or at community center gatherings, and we'd ask people what they thought about, you know, the borders and what's being discussed. So by round three of the planning process, our Sea Lion Gulch SMR had a northern border at Sea Lion Rock and a southern border at Randall Creek. Then at the October 2010 BRTF meeting, stakeholders moved this southern border north toward Kooski Creek. And so that's why the borders are being kind of questioned now. The Petrolio community has made it clear that they feel strongly about the access they would lose if the border, if this northern border does move up to the lighthouse. The southern border of Sea Lion Gulch SMR, there the harvest is almost exclusively offshore. The nearest vehicle access is over 4 miles away. Nobody's harvesting onshore at that location, so it's all fishing vessels. So GPS coordinates is actually a good way to mark that southern boundary. However, on the northern border of the SMR, harvest is both onshore and offshore. So the northern border does need to be a permanent visual landmark. Can I say just a couple more?
Wrap it up quickly, please.
I will. Thank you very much. So enforcement is equally challenging whether it's at the lighthouse or at Sea Lion Rock. I don't know if the game warden went out there to look as he did at other sites, but you cannot see that northern border from the vehicle access, whether it's at Sea Lion Rock or at the lighthouse. Equally challenging. And I think community buy-in is really important when enforcement's this challenging. So please support the stakeholder array.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jennifer Savage. Karen Garrison, Daniel Rocky.
Hi, Jennifer Savage with Ocean Conservancy. I was fortunate enough 3 years ago to be hired to work on the Marine Life Protection Act here on the North Coast. I also volunteer for Humboldt Surfrider. I've been involved in local radio for about 14 years, both as a volunteer and in paid positions, although if you know radio, pay is sort of an overstatement, as well as been involved in other local media. I've raised 3 kids here. Point being, I know a lot of people in a lot of different circles here. Over the time I've lived here, we've made a lot of friends throughout the community. And there are a couple of things that people have in common, despite their political affiliations, despite what they do for a living here. And primarily, it's that they love living here and they love being part of this community, in large part because of the landscape, the forests, the rivers, and the ocean. And so when I had the honor of serving on the regional stakeholder group, I was quite pleased, although not altogether surprised, to see that that love of community and love of the natural resources here translated into this unified proposal. It wasn't easy, as you have heard time and time again. There are a lot of challenges. Nobody's 100% happy. But we do feel that we have the best network that we could come up with to balance all of the different important issues that were at hand. And as someone who loves the ocean and cares a great deal about it as a whole, I'm very excited that the statewide network will be completed after the adoption of the North Coast MPAs. And as someone who loves this community a great deal and feels like I'm a fairly integral part of it, I do respectfully ask you to maintain the stakeholder intent and choose option one on the different sub-options that are available. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Karen Garrison.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Karen Garrison, Natural Resources Defense Council. What she said.
Thank you.
I'll be very brief. Please approve the EIR and adopt the preferred project. Listen to Jennifer and everybody else who's spoken on sticking to option one or letter A. That works in every case to make sure we don't erode compliance with the science guidelines and that we maintain community support. You're in the home stretch. I want to commend you for a tremendous job, and I include in the you, the Secretary, the Department, and the Marine Life Protection Act initiative. I think you're creating something that will make a significant slice of the planet healthier, that will put fish in the bank, that will connect us better with wildness, and that will leave a lasting legacy because it's well-designed and it's well-built. Thank you.
Thank you. Last speaker, Daniel Rocky.
Good afternoon, Vice President and the members of the Commission. And also thank the Wiat Tribe for letting me be here. My name is Daniel Rocky, Sr. I'm Vice Chairman of Intertribal Sikio and Council and the Vice Chairman of Sherwood Valley Band of Pomo Indians. I'm in Willits, California. The MLPA process has, that has brought us here today has ushered in a new era of relations between the tribes and the state of California regarding the management of our marine resources. I am pleased to that the Sikio and Council and the Sherwood Valley Rancheria have participated in this process to ensure the protection of both our ocean environment and the tribe's culture access to the marine resources that are so vital to our cultural survival. Today, I wish to express the full support of both the Sikio and Council and the Sherwood Valley Rancheria for the proposed North Coast MLPA regulations. And I have some more. I'll just let you guys read it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. All right, Mr. Vice President, it's yours.
Thank you, Sankey. Thank you, everybody, for taking the time to come here and to comment today and share your wisdom with us. I want to take a minute to thank all the stakeholders, especially the members of the Regional Stakeholder Group, for all their hard work on over the last couple of years. It's been a long process, but a very impressive one. I also want to thank the staff of the MLPA Initiative, some of whom are here today, and the Department of Fish and Game for their terrific work on this proposal. This North Coast is unique in many respects, and we've learned a lot over the last couple of years in working on this from everybody who's participated. And we appreciate the good work of the department and everybody who has contributed to this. I know Chuck Bonham wanted to say something about and react to some of what he's heard today, and we ought to hear from Chuck next and then my fellow commissioners.
Thank you, Commissioner Sutton. I wanted to offer a couple of comments based on the public input as director of the department, which may help you as you discuss and then deliberate and then decide. I've got a regret and then four comments. My regret is that I will not be able to make the celebration tonight that Harbor District official Mr. Aaron, my friend, said will be taking place to honor the community's unity. So I apologize for not being able to make it tonight. And my four comments are these. First, I believe that the environmental impact report in front of you is certifiable. It's a well-done document. I think it serves as a very defensible basis for you to deliberate and then make your decisions today. So I urge you to certify it. Second comment, I want to actually thank those in the audience, from our elected officials to our tribal members to our commercial and recreational fishers to our conservationists. I believe that this is just the beginning of the next phase of important partnership, and we would not have gotten here if those individuals and those different parts of this community had come together. My next comment is about the future, and specifically on behalf of the department to the tribal representatives in the room and those tribal governments who worked on this unified approach. I can tell you that the Department of Fish and Game is committed going forward to creating a better partnership with you. I think success during implementation requires us to work shoulder to shoulder on outreach, on education, on science, and on monitoring. So that is a commitment that I can make to you as director. It won't be easy. We won't always see eye to eye. But certainly we should be having that coordinated communication and commitment to partnership to make it work. And that commitment to partnership, I think, also runs to all the other stakeholders who are interested in implementation. Okay, so for my last comment, it might be useful for commissioners just to have the scorecard in front of you. And I want to focus on those decisions, and I think there are six of them, where you have two options And the option is either the regional stakeholder group proposal, which is the preferred alternative, or an option two, which is based on enforcement feasibility. And I want to confirm that on decision one, the department is affirmatively withdrawing option two. So you only have option one. That leaves then decision four, decision five, decision seven, decision eight, and decision nine, where you have that option one or two decision in front of you. And here's what I'd like to say on this point. First, there may be no more difficult job in conservation in the country than being a Department of Fish and Game warden. As you know, there are approximately about 400 of wardens. The only comparable state in ecological diversity and coastline and geographic kind of complexity is Florida. Florida has about 700 wardens. So enforcement for us at the department is a mission critical issue, and it's challenging, even in the best of times. However, we also acknowledge the incredible uniqueness of the regional stakeholders coming together and understand the importance of them having done so. It's not, in my mind, for you to read an option B as the department, or excuse me, an option two in any of these scenarios to mean the department opposes option one. So I wanted to offer that clarification while acknowledging the challenges we face on the enforcement front. And in that regard, I will accept any of the offers that might be put forward by the stakeholders to help on implementation. For example, both the Mendocino County supervisor letter to you, the comments by the supervisor from Mendocino County, and the comments by the Harbor District representative for Humboldt Bay offered to get creative on implementation as to enforcement. And specifically in Decision 4, I accept that offer. I think one of our enforcement challenges in the Bay could be kind of reduced if we could find a way to create buoys out there that would survive the tidal swing that allow the department to better enforce. So, thank you.
Thank you, Director Bonham. Someone earlier today invoked the United Nations, and I want to do the same myself. 2 weeks ago, the United Nations Secretary General made a statement on biodiversity that I thought it has a bearing on the work we're doing here. And here's what he said. Quote, Secretary Ban Ki-moon of the United Nations, "We must galvanize action to improve the management and conservation of oceans through initiatives by the United Nations, by governments and other partners to curb overfishing, expand marine protected areas, and reduce ocean pollution and the impact of climate change," unquote. So your work here is cutting edge and certainly consistent with what United Nations Secretary General had in mind. I appreciate, Chuck, your input and your guidance to us. And let me just say a couple of words, and then I want to hear from my fellow commissioners about what we have heard today and what they've taken into account. While I appreciate the good work of the department in putting together the feasibility proposals for the North Coast, I think we have to recognize that this is a unique place, and we have a unique consensus proposal before us that was developed and agreed by all the stakeholders here. That's unique. We didn't face that in any of the other regions of the coast that we dealt with earlier. To me, here's what that means to me. I think we should operate under a presumption that the unified proposal developed by the regional stakeholder group should stand unless there are very, very compelling reasons to feel differently or to change them. And that means that I think we should look at each of these very carefully and figure out whether or not we should tamper with that consensus. Commissioner Rogers?
I don't disagree with what you have to say, but I would like to proceed with doing the EIR and then going into the various options.
Sure.
Mr. Bayless? And then I'll have some remarks after we're done.
Thanks, Commissioner. So I'd like to give my perspective, but it'd be short and clear for my position. First, I think we do need a motion, and I'd like to make that motion for final certification of the environmental documentation.
Second.
Great. And adoption of the findings is section 632, per how Sankey wants to read it into the record. Second, I would make a motion to adopt all of the RNCD options for decisions 1 through 9. Third, on the unresolved tribal issues, I think critical to our success is to continue to embrace the leadership, culture, and traditional ways of our Native Americans, allowing the continued take of all marine resources pursuant to regulations.
Thank you, Commissioner Bettis. We have two motions on the table. The first one's been seconded. Sankey, do you want to read that first one?
Yes. The Fish and Game Commission certifies that the final environmental document for the North Coast Marine Protected Areas has been completed in compliance with the California Environmental Quality Act, and that it was presented to the commission, and the commission has reviewed and considered the information contained in the final ED prior to approving the projects. The certified ED provides that there are no significant adverse environmental impacts. The commission finds, on the basis of the facts in the record and the environmental document, that the proposed project and alternatives will have no significant adverse impacts.
We have a motion made and seconded. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Unanimous. Thank you.
Thank you. That brings us to possible adoption of the Marine Protected Area Regulations, and we will be projecting the scorecard, if that helps, and okay. Also the audience can follow you.
And Commissioner Bayless, you wanted to you made a motion earlier. Can you?
I did. I'll reiterate my motion to again, because there was some confusion about option one or option A, and I think is more consistent if we just say all of the ones that are proposed under the RNCP, those options 1 through 9.
All right. To be clear, Craig will highlight them, that on decision 1, Pyramid Point, that's option 1. Decision 2, Reading Rock, that's option A. Reading Rock SMCA decision 3 is option A. Option 1 on South Humboldt. Sorry, Craig.
Option 3 is obsolete.
Yeah. And then on Sea Lion Gulch, decision 5 is retained boundaries. I'm getting seasick now. 10 Mile Beach, retain. Oh, Craig.
6.
Decision 6, Double Cone, is retain the fishing regs per the RNCP. 7, retain the boundary at 10 Mile. Big River Estuary is, this is a trick.
Yep, there's
Is option B, which is add recreational take of surf perch.
That's why.
Yeah, thank you. And then decision 9 of our river is option B, add recreational take of salmon consistent with regulations. So for decisions 1 through 9, you have a motion.
Mr. Acting President, Vice President, I will second that motion, but I want to say I'm going to do that in immense respect for my fellow commissioners, but even more so that the commission can follow the unanimity that was expressed in this community. There was an immense amount of work that was done in order to get us here, and I respect that. Having said that, I would have liked to have discussed Double Cone, because I do believe we do have stewards there on that property, and I wish, while I am going to vote in an opposite direction, I hope that those who were involved in wanting to do that do not take that as my not understanding the degree of their stewardship. And I respect that. So I second your motion, sir.
Thank you, Commissioner Rogers. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
Yeah, we're going to do this in phases. So I got a motion for 1 through 9. Let's lock her in, see if I got a majority, and then we'll go to the last three items, and then we'll do a vote for the whole package.
Okay.
So.
All right. We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 All right.
Unanimous. Thank you.
All right, that brings us to the second page of our scorecard. And again, per your request, the tribes had requested, and you gave them a homework assignment to do a factual record. You got six, and based for various areas, there were three areas, though, that we got additional letters that tied them to the other factual records, and I was told later that I had inappropriately included tribes that shouldn't have been. So your current three options, Pyramid Point, SMCA, in your regulatory package, you have the, and my apologies for mispronouncing, Sherea Heights, Indian Community of the Trinidad Rancheria, Elk Valley Rancheria, Rezegini Rancheria, Smith River, and Yurok Tribe of the Yurok Reservation. And we had received, I asked the tribes to work out this difference. We have received letters acknowledging that they should not have been included on this. I believe the Rezegini Rancheria is the one exception. So based, my best information suggests that they prefer an option B, where in Pyramid Point only Smith River Rancheria was named as tribes allowing to continue fishing unaltered.
So the other tribes agree to have that one tribe, is that correct?
Yeah, they agreed that their name shouldn't have been included. Okay. At least that's my understanding. We may...
Okay, if there's any difference, please come now. So,
all right.
Hearing none.
At Point St. George Reef Offshore SMCA, I see Russ Crabtree drifting up front. I'll finish this, see if he wants to talk still. At Point St. George, I had listed Sherea Heights, Indian Community of Trinidad Rancheria, Elk Valley, Rezegini, Smith River, Yurok Tribe of the Yurok Reservation. According to Smith River, their territory, only Elk Valley Rancheria and Smith River Rancheria should actually be retained in the Point St. George Reef Offshore SMCA. Is that correct, Russ? I'm getting a head nod. And the last one, Reading Rock SMCA.
I'm sorry, did the other tribes agree to that?
Yes, they got letters.
Okay.
Agreeing, except for the Rezegini, agreeing that their names shouldn't have been included.
All right.
And that holds also for Reading Rock, where I had the Sherea Heights Indian Community, the Trinidad Rancheria, Rezegini, and Yurok Tribe of the Yurok Reservation. On Reading Rock SMC, only the Yurok Tribe of the Yurok Reservation should be recognized. Hopefully that made sense. So if someone wants to put a motion.
I will make the motion then that we adopt the options. It looks like it's all option B as modified by you, and I suggest you read those again.
All right. So the motion is that Pyramid Point SMCA option B would include Smith River Rancheria. And a no change for the other tribes listed. At Point St. George Reef Offshore SMCA, option B would identify Elk Valley Rancheria and Smith River Rancheria, and would be no change on the others. And then Reading Rock, option B would include the Yurok Tribe of the Yurok Reservation and a no change choice for the others.
That is my motion.
Just to clarify, when I read the firm support of the continued take of marine resources by the Native Americans pursuant to the existing regulations.
Correct.
Could you opine then on the marine reserves, what that means?
Yeah, the marine reserves, there is no take allowed by anybody. So this is just conservation areas that would only allow members of these tribes to harvest under existing legal regulations.
Do I hear a second? Motion has been made and seconded. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. Unanimous.
All right. So now that we have a scorecard with all the options selected, I would like to wrap this up with one final Uber motion, and I have a recommended motion. The Fish and Game Commission hereby amends Section 632, Title 14, regarding marine protected areas for the North Coast Study Region with a proposed project and selected options as specified by the projected choices in the scorecard.
So moved.
I'll second that.
Great.
Any discussion?
No, but I want to make a comment after we're done with this.
So
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye?
Aye.
All right. Unanimous. Thank you.
Thank you. Success.
Commissioner Rogers.
I'm going to perhaps get a little bit emotional, and so just bear with me here, guys. And a little esoteric, for those of you who've known me for the last whatever, you know I do that too. There was a philosopher named Joseph Schumpeter who once said the truth passes through three stages before it is recognized as truth. The first stage is that it's ridiculed. Does that sound familiar? The second is that it's opposed. Also familiar. The third is it's ultimately regarded as self-evident. The truth of the MLPA is, at least to those of us who've been involved since inception, and I'm one of those, and for those of us who have done our homework by poring through literally hundreds of pages of peer-reviewed documents from all over the world, the truth of the MLPA is now approaching self-evident, or at least it certainly should be, if you've done your homework. Fortunately for the stakeholders of the public trust resources of the state of California, whom we represent, logic, fact, and analysis have prevailed. With the adoption of this final coastal link of the MLPA, we have established along the coast of California, from the Oregon to the Mexican border, an ecosystem-based series of marine protected areas, the first such system in the entire world. Thus, we have made substantial progress towards attaining the conditions wherein we are poised to return California's marine resources to the sustainable abundance that we all once enjoyed, at least those of you who are old enough to remember it. I feel privileged to be sitting here on this most momentous day. I've been working on the installation of the MLPA for the past 7.5 years. My children have gotten a lot older than merely going to kindergarten. As a grandfather of 6, whose grandchildren are, as we speak, busy and very busy, becoming watermen and waterwomen, or water babies at this point, I can now realistically believe that they and their fellow Californians will have a good shot at seeing that which I saw way back in the 1950s when I first started scuba diving along the coast of California. To have played a small part in this victory for all of us is, thus far, my finest reward. I have profound thanks for those of you who brought this to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Rogers, for that moving expression of your how you feel about this. I think we've all been through a lot, and that goes for everybody in this room. We all have a lot to be proud of here with the largest marine reserve network anywhere in the United States. Not the largest marine reserve, that would be in the Hawaiian Islands in the mid-Pacific, but certainly the largest science-based marine reserve network in the United States. And I agree with you that we are going to reap the benefits of this for many years to come. So thank you for your expression. Commissioner Bayless? Other business, Sankey?
Yes, we actually have another agenda item, 3. It seems kind of anticlimactic at this point. Receipt of information regarding Pacific Gas and Electric Company's seismic testing project in Central California. And we have a representative from PG&E here. This was at request of one of your commissioners based on some testimony at your last meeting. Go ahead, sir.
First of all, Mark Krause with Pacific Gas and Electric, congratulations. It was great to be here to see that. I was here before you in Ontario, actually, several months ago, and we were asked to come and give an update on our activities to date on our seismic surveys off the coast of Diablo Canyon. So I'm going to give you just a brief kind of thumbnail sketch, and then we have a that'll be in just a minute anyway. So we have a slide deck that Chris Vardis from our environmental group will be sharing with you. First of all, the State Lands Commission is the CEQA lead agency for this project, and State Lands issued their draft environmental impact report about a month and a half, maybe 2 months ago now. Public comments were closed over a month ago, and based on those comments, they're sort of reworking that. We anticipate a final EIR to go before State Lands in July, and that would be on the street in all likelihood early July. And then we also have applications in for a coastal development permit and a federal consistency review with the State Coastal Commission, and that we anticipate in August potentially. I'm sorry?
No.
In August, potentially September, depending on the timing here. This is all for work we hope to do in the fall of this year, although, as you can tell, the schedule is very tight. So, as I say, Chris Vardis is here. He'll walk you through the slide deck, and we're both here to answer any questions that you have. Sankey, did I miss anything?
No, that's
okay.
Wonderful. Thank you. Did the department have anything it wanted to say? Oh. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. Chris Vardis,
oh.
Senior Land Planner with PG&E, here to give a brief overview of the Diablo Canyon Power Plant Offshore Seismic Survey Program. This first slide shows a picture of the Diablo Canyon Power Plant. The brief presentation, first I'll give an overview of the proposed survey program. Secondly, talk about the permits and approvals that we're seeking from the various state, federal, and local agencies, discuss schedule and next steps. PG&E has been maintaining a long-term seismic safety program as part of the Diablo Canyon Power Plant operations for close to 20 years. Through that research and through gleaning information from other individuals and academic institutions, there's a general understanding of the fault structures off the coast of the Diablo Canyon Power Plant. The proposed survey intends to look at these fault structures in more detail, and secondly, to try to identify the interconnection or intersections between those different fault structures so that we can further analyze what are the potential of seismic events that could take place, what are the probability, and what is the magnitude, and from that information, identify whether there's additional design details that need to be incorporated into the plant to ensure seismic safety. This slide and the next one show some of these targets, both the proposed or existing fault structures, including the Hosgree, San Simeon, shoreline faults, and the intersections between these different fault structures. So this slide and the next one. This is work that we propose is a continuation of a lot of seismic survey work that we recently completed, both onshore surveys that we completed last fall, as well as some offshore surveys that we did both off the coast of Point Bouchon as well as within San Luis Bay using existing high-energy survey permits that one of our vendor maintains with the California State Lands Commission. But what we're proposed to do now is a little bit more substantial. There's three components to it. There's a high-energy offshore survey that's proposed that would allow us to penetrate about 8 meters deep into the ocean bottom. Secondly, to do additional survey work onshore. And thirdly, to do survey work within the nearshore zone. This graphic in the yellow polygon shows the overall survey boundary. The green line shows the 3-mile state waters limit, and the polygons that are hatched shows the existing marine protected areas to the north of Cambria and White Rock, and off the coast of the Diablo Canyon Power Plant is the Point Bouchon Marine Protected Area. The offshore seismic survey would be conducted this fall within approximately a 3 to 4 month window. We propose to carry out those activities in federal waters, state waters, up to a depth of about 25 meters. The survey window was September through December, and that window was chosen because of the lower abundance of marine mammals during that period, in particular gray whales. The survey operations would need to be conducted 24/7 every day and during the night for approximately 82 days. The survey itself would only be 42 days, but when you add in the time it requires to get this very specialized survey vessel to the site, to deploy the equipment, to test it, to verify the sound generation, and to allow for refueling, we're looking at a total period of 82 days. That 82 days also accounts for possible shutdowns due to encounterings with marine mammals, as well as delays due to inclement weather. So those four polygons show the four different survey boxes that we propose to operate this seismic survey vessel. You can see the blue lines are when we actually would be conducting the survey, and then the green lines are what are called churns. And what I'm going to do is skip forward to a number of slides and then go back to this one, and we'll talk about it in a little bit more detail. This is the proposed vessel that we would use. It's called the Marcus Langseth. It's owned by the National Science Foundation out of D.C. It's operated, though, by Columbia University, which has a cooperative operating agreement with National Science Foundation. It's about 250 feet in length. And during the survey, there would be a fair amount of equipment that would trail behind the ship. We would have these air guns that would generate this high-level sound, about 250 decibels. And then we would have further trailing behind the ship an array of hydrophone streamers, which would collect this information.
How many decibels?
250 decibels, right at the sound source.
And could you give us some comparison of that sound?
You know, off the top of my head, I don't have a good comparison, but let's just say it's fairly loud. I would say that most construction sites, that a construction site could be over 100 decibels. So it's very loud.
Has PG&E done studies on what that does to fish and other aquatic?
PG&E has conducted a number of its own studies to look at potential effects to both fish larvae, fish, and to marine mammals. Our results show that potential impacts to fish and fish larvae would be less than significant. Depending on the proximity of a marine mammal to the sound source, there could be potential disturbance or potential harm. So as part of this program, we developed a marine wildlife contingency plan or program to monitor and manage the extent to which these survey operations take place to, let's say, allow some disturbance to occur to marine mammals, but to ensure no harm to marine mammals takes place. And that overall program has been devised pursuant to the HESC guidelines, as well as per direction from the National Marine Fisheries Service. I'll talk about that in more detail through we get to the presentation. So the way it works is behind the ship is you have the sound source. There's two arrays of air guns. Each array has a total of 10 air guns, 9 of which would be operating at one time, and then 9 would operate at the other time. So they would alternate, 9 and then 9. And there would be two that wouldn't operate, and they're just sitting there in reserve. And then trailing further behind are these hydrophone streamers, which would trail approximately 3.7 miles behind the ship. Because of that length, it's important that the ship maintain operations at all time, because if the ship were to stop, that equipment would sink to the bottom, or could sink to the bottom, which would be a problem. The air gun array at the sound, right at the sound source is about 250 decibels. The frequency range is about 200 hertz or less. And then the hydrophones, of course, about 3.7 miles long. This is a schematic of how this, the program works. So you have the sound source directly behind the ship that would generate a sound that would travel, let's say, at a 30 to 80 degree angle towards the bottom. That sound energy would be absorbed. It would be reflected or refracted. And based on that change in the sound pressure, it's absorbed by the hydrophone streamers, and the program is able to map at a CAT scan level the fault structures in that area. When looking at the environmental analysis and potential effects, we developed an extensive acoustic modeling program to identify the extent to which that sound would attenuate based on distance. And when we looked at this, we looked at, well, what's the type of gradient associated with it? So if the ship's going towards a gradient that's going upslope or downslope or parallel to shore, how does that sound attenuation change? And we looked at different decibel ratings based on distance, and we were able to identify what is the worst case based on those different types of gradient. And we came up with this criteria. So if you look at the numbers 160 decibels, at that zone, which is maybe 1.2 miles or 6 miles away from the ship, as a marine mammal enters into that area, there's a potential for disturbance to a marine mammal. As it gets closer, that potential for disturbance increases. If it gets to within 180 decibels, there's potential harm. So working with National Marine Fisheries Service is part of an incidental harassment authorization that we're working to achieve and develop a program where we have a number of marine mammal observers on board the Langseth survey vessel, as well as supporting vessels, to monitor the extent to which marine mammals would enter into these zones and to, if necessary, curtail operations where we turn down a number of the guns or we shut down all of them or maybe one. So going back to this slide, when the boat is conducting the seismic information, 18 of those guns will be operating at the same time, such that we would have a fairly large exclusion zone radius. But during the churns, only one of those guns would be operating, such that exclusion zone is much smaller. When we start the air guns, we would start them very slowly and increase that sound volume to enable marine mammals, in essence, to clear the area. If marine mammals start to get close to the exclusion zone, we would turn down the volume, and if they get in the safety zone, we would shut operations altogether. That's the first component of the survey. The second component is the nearshore operations, which involves the installation of these geophones within five transect corridors off the coast, one of which is within the Point Bouchon Marine Protected Area. The geophones, there's a picture of them in that slide. They're about 14 inches in diameter, about 6 inches tall. They weigh about 70 pounds, and they would be spaced about 150 feet apart along each of those transects, and we'd have a weighted cable or rope that would go in between those geophones. Those geophones and cables would not go onshore. They would stay in the nearshore zone out to the state water limit. And they're passive. They have their own batteries, and they're not connected by any wires, just a cable. This graphic shows how those geophones would be deployed by ship, and when we get really close to shore, we would use divers to actually deploy them. And the thought is to have a marine mammal observer on board the vessel that for during installation of the nearshore geophones to make sure there's no impacts to marine mammals as well. The third component is a number of work that would be done onshore. We would do work on Dabblecannon Power Plant property. Secondly, work on the Morro Bay sand spit in Morro Bay, and thirdly, up in the Cambria Harmony region. This involves three things. One is we'd be operating these what are called vibrosized or accelerated weight drop trucks that, in essence, vibrate the ground and generate a sound source. We would then install these small geophones that would be connected to those vehicles. And thirdly, we would install these coffee can size nodal devices that are autonomous in areas around where those vehicles are operating, and through the attenuation of that sound that disperses outward, we're able to map fault structures onshore. These nodal devices that we install onshore would also be used to capture sound that is generated from that vessel so that we can triangulate and better map and image the fault structures during the survey program. For the onshore, we carried out a more extensive component of this last fall. We looked at about 110 miles of areas, and we deployed a very comprehensive environmental compliance and monitoring program during that. We had biologists, cultural resources specialists. We met several times with California Department of Fish and Game personnel, as well as personnel with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and with Native American tribes to make sure the overall program was agreeable to them and to make sure there were no impacts to threatened and endangered species. And we could attest that no impacts did occur. The overall survey schedule is about 82 days. The slide goes step by step how long the different aspects of that. Important thing to note is that the duration of the survey itself, when we're actually operating the air guns, is only about 42 days. Marine Wildlife Contingency Plan, this is a key aspect of the program. This plan is being developed through our investigations as well as in coordination with the various state, federal, and local agencies. The idea is that we would have marine mammal observers on board the Langseth survey vessel as well as on support vessels and within an airplane to, first of all, look prior to activity to look at the density and distribution of marine mammals based on upwelling and presence of food, and to fine-tune the survey program to avoid impacts to marine mammals. The air guns would be slowly ramped up. We would start with just one mitigation gun. During the churns, when we're not actually doing the survey, only one gun would operate. The Marine Mammal Observers, or MMOs, would have the authority to shut down operations if there's potential impacts. They have authority to make that request or direction to the captain for the program. During the actual survey, we would implement a very thoughtful communication plan to keep all constituents and affected parties apprised of where the surveys are going to take place. We would have daily communications to fishermen, letting them know exactly where we're going to be. The intention is not to close fishing operations in the entire survey area, but only to restrict fishing from those areas that are being actively surveyed. And so based on fluctuations or minor refinements of where we go based on our observations of marine mammals, we would communicate that information to the fishermen and other parties of where we're going to be. We're working with another number of agencies to seek approval. As my colleague Mark Krause identified, California State Lands Commission is a CEQA lead agency. They're looking to complete the final EIR by the beginning of July and bring that document to their commission for certification by the end of July. We're working with California Coastal Commission for a CDP and a federal consistency determination. We're working with the National Science Foundation, who's serving as the federal lead agency in completion of an EPEA. They're also coordinating extensively with the National Marine Fisheries Service, as well as the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, pursuant to Section 7 of the Endangered Species Act. And we're working with California Department of Fish and Game. We've had the pleasure to work with Becky Oda and Brian Owens of your staff. They've been great to work with. And we're seeking to obtain a scientific collecting permit for work within for this survey, and in particular for work within the Point Bouchon MPA. This is the overall schedule. EIR certification in July. Obtaining all the other necessary approvals into August and September, with the goal of starting the survey within September 15th and completing all activities by December 31st. That concludes my presentations. I'm available for any questions that you may have.
Thank you for the presentation. Yeah, we do have a few questions. I, as a resident of the Central Coast, I'm particularly grateful that you are putting a premium on nuclear safety. On the other hand, we also have a duty to safeguard the marine reserve that we placed at Diablo Canyon, and to look after the welfare of other species in the area, not just marine mammals, but the fishes right. as well, which was my first question. You focused a lot of your testimony on marine mammals. I take it, though, you are looking at potential impacts on a much wider range of species?
We are looking at a wider range of species, including impacts to pinnipeds, to sea otters, as well as to onshore species.
How about fish?
We are looking at potential impacts to fish and to fish larvae. Looking at existing literature, we haven't identified any long-term significant impacts. The EIR did not identify long-term significant impacts to fish. Pursuant to the scientific collecting permit, we completed a fairly detailed modeling assessment of potential impacts to fish and to fish larvae. That's been provided to Fish and Game staff. Secondly,
excuse me, if I may. Are you saying that a 250 dB sound is not going to involve take? 250 dB, as I understand it, since that's it's a geometric progression, as you know, how dB is calculated. The average dB of a stun grenade, which would put all of us literally on the floor here, is about what, 130? 250 is not twice 130. Do you know what it is? No, I don't. You're the one who's giving the presentation. It's many, 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 many times 130. And 130 would put us all on the ground if somebody threw a stun grenade in here. So are you telling me that there is going to be no take in the Marine Reserve?
There could be potential take within the Marine Reserve, yes.
So what are you going to do to assure us that you understand that take?
Right.
Well, we've assessed what the potential impact is. We have that literature. We provided that to California State Lands Commission.
California State Lands Commission is not us.
Yes. We're concerned about you violating the MPA and what we're just enacting. So that's where we're coming from.
We're the
state lands can't absolve you, or the feds can't say it's okay. I mean, I think you've done a good job. And Commissioner Rogers, are you done, or you want to?
No, well, please go ahead. Well,
can I make one more point really
quickly? Sure, sure.
So the other aspect is we are applying for a scientific collecting permit from the California Department of Fish and Game, which would allow activities to take place within the Point Pichon Marine Protected Area.
Yes.
Is that right? Well, I think you have to appear before the commission to get out of the...
Well, I'm actually going to ask that that be true.
Well, hang on a second. First comment, a lot like Commissioner Sutton's comment, on behalf of the department, you know, we understand and support the project purpose, which is to better understand...
Clearly. Who needs Fukushima?
Sure.
The relationship...
That, we got that, Chuck.
Sure, absolutely.
That said, we did submit a comment letter to State Lands Commission on May 18th, and we're in the classic moment of comment on a draft environmental document. You know, we expect to continue to work with the company to sort out any remaining differences, but I will just quote from the second page of that letter at the very end of a paragraph in the middle of the page related to marine life protected areas. Quote, permission may be granted through the issuance of scientific collecting permits, comma, and additional mitigation measures will need to be added to the final EIR to reflect the need for the the SCPs. So
yeah,
we're
Chuck,
engaged in a conversation.
Good, because to me, first of all, we have not the department has not been in the position to do a biological baseline of all of the strategic, if you will, critters who are in that particular reserve. We haven't done that right now. So we don't really know to the extent to which we need to know before you are potentially taking a vast number of them. We don't know that. That may be true. That may not be true. We don't know what that biological baseline is. To me, Mr. Director, I believe very strongly that we should have PG&E be responsible for a biological baseline of that with our criteria, whatever is the department's criteria. And Becky, you know that better than I do, for sure. To make sure that we know what's there, and then when they start this, we actually have surveys run continually, because I know how sensitive, I don't know scientifically how sensitive fish are to vibrations in the water, but they are really sensitive. I mean, there's not a lure manufacturer in the world who doesn't put rattles or little tiny things. I mean, fish are really sensitive. They have that long lateral, if you're a biologist at all, you certainly understand that. That's something that fish, I don't know what level of sound it would take to absolutely destroy a fish's ability to even hunt its own prey. I mean, I don't know that. So I'm not suggesting, I'm not a Luddite. I'm an electrical engineer. I'm not against the project. I want to make certain we know what's there and we know what you've done to what's there, and I believe that's your responsibility to tell us.
Right. Okay.
Nice done. So let me add, and Commissioner Rogers, thank you for making a lot of the points I was going to make. I'm going to start out with my personal opinion. I think PG&E is one of the finest utilities. It's my personal opinion out there. They have consistently shown responsibility to not only your ratepayers but to the environment. So I would acknowledge that about PG&E. You're sensitive and you pay attention. However, we don't want another pipeline 132, right? That's very unfortunate for us in California. And so where we heard about the sensitivity to the mammals and other systems, we're responsible for the fish. And in those reserves, we have to know, as Commissioner Rogers pointed out, the take that's going to happen. And so I think involving PG&E with the monitoring of those will help us.
Absolutely, and we not only want to do that holistically within the protected areas, but also for the project overall.
We've been talking with some fishermen from Morro Bay who are here. We've done over, I think we've had about 6 meetings with local fishermen. We want to compensate for loss, but we also want to monitor and make sure we compensate for loss long-term after the project if there is any net.
I think it's very critical that you do that. Here's the problem that perhaps you were here when we were talking about. These marine reserves are ecosystem-based. This is a holistic approach. We aren't trying to protect a particular fish or an abalone or a whatever. We know that there is a web of life that exists within these reserves. What we don't know, where the science is just not good enough yet, is that delicate interplay between those various species. So it is critical that you guys, and you could, it's not going to cost you much money to do this, is run the transects, count everything that's in there of every important, and the department knows what they are, indicator species, all the things that we need that are in that web of life, and then do your tests, do what you need to do, and then go back in there immediately thereafter and tell us what's there. That'll tell you a lot about what it is you did, mm-hmm. and tell us what damage has been done.
Absolutely.
Because you know as well as I do, and again, I'm not against your project. I know you need to do that. I understand that. There's a larger context here. But we really need to understand what happened to that reserve.
And I should have opened with, PG&E's had a long-term seismic program before the plant ever operated. We were out there studying the seismic picture.
Well, you guys manage San Onofre, right?
No, we do not, sir.
Oh, you don't.
Only Diablo Canyon. That would be our sister utility
well,
to the south.
Would you believe one of my classmates in college was the manager of San Onofre for a long time. Not now, but it was for a long period of time.
So you probably know, but we had been doing 2D work and work that didn't require these air cannons. Legislation required that the CEC look at this. They pushed us toward this 3D format, and there's a lot more data that can be gathered from it. So we're sort of between some regulatory pinch points and doing everything we can to satisfy all of them.
Yeah, so just to confirm, the company understands it needs special permission from the department relative to the activity in the marine protected areas. We're having that conversation. And that permission occurs through the scientific collecting permit. And I'll take it on to keep you updated about the developments there going forward.
Thank you, Chuck.
Thank you.
I feel we all worked so hard. You know, I mean, you see me get all wound up. I mean, I've been doing this for 7.5 years, and today you saw the final coastal. Mm-hmm. God help us in San Francisco Bay. But you saw the final coastal today. I really don't want that thing to get messed up. But if it does, I want to understand what happened and what we can do to perhaps offset that or mitigate it in some way. And the only way you're going to know that is to do a very careful biological assessment of what's there right now. And Chuck's department can tell you, and one of them sitting right there, exactly which critters you got to count.
Okay.
You mentioned also compensation for the fishermen. Mm-hmm. That, of course, is a very complex and can be a very complex topic. Mm-hmm. Without this monitoring program that my colleagues are suggesting, how are you going to know what to compensate the fishermen for example? So there's a lot of unanswered questions here. I'm glad to hear that the department is paying attention to this through the scientific collecting permit process. We authorize the scientific collecting permit regulations. The department implements them. So thank you, Chuck, for keeping us informed of this. We all have a particular interest in this because of the intersection of various public interests here, and obviously have a job to protect the integrity of the MPA network that we've just completed here. So we're going to watch this very carefully.
Understood.
Yeah, we'd like to stay involved, and not, Chuck, we appreciate you keeping us informed, but we think PG&E should, especially with the Marine Protected Reserve. We don't want a headline that says,
yeah,
you know, we ignored the reserves, unfortunately. We look forward to you talking to us more about it.
Indeed, we do. Don't take me wrong to think that I'm suggesting ill intent by your organization at all. As my fellow commissioner, who knows actually a great deal more about your organization than do I, you come well received here. I mean, we understand that. It's just that you've got to be very careful with what we've just created here. We want to be certain that we understand that anything that is going on in those reserves, we completely understand. We have a whole bunch of stakeholders, literally tens of thousands of stakeholders who participated in this process over the last, it's actually been 8 years. Mm-hmm. They rely upon us to, they believed us when we said that we would be establishing these reserves and we would go back and look at them over time to tell everyone how they're doing. Because the whole idea is that these reserves spill over into the surrounding areas, which then allows larger fish and more fish and crustaceans, you know, all kinds of critters, to spill over from these nursery areas, if you will. Right. It's critical to us to understand that dynamic, so you need to help us in that regard.
Absolutely. We'll work with staff.
So as a final action item on this, Sonke, I would just suggest that I can ensure that I send you the department's May 18th, 2012 comment letter on the draft environmental impact report, and then you can circulate it to the commissioners. And further, you know, I was remiss to mention it earlier, but, you know, I owe you and Adriana a thank you and all the commission staff, as well as Becky Oda, Steve Wirtz, Susan Ashcroft, the department staff. The protected area work was professional and became personal for all of you at great time and expense. So the collaboration between our staff, I think, was key to success on MPAs, and we will ensure that same kind of collaboration on this seismic issue going forward.
Thank you, Chuck. I, you know, I'm sorry you sort of got caught in a firestone storm from me. I said I've been at this for 7.5 years. I get paid, what, $100 a meeting?
Yeah.
Okay, $100 a meeting. I'm a private investor now, thank goodness. I dedicated 2 to 3 days a week for 7.5 years to this.
I once had
help Sonke's, me here.
I once had Sonke's job with another state agency.
Oh, God, help
I always appreciated those who did the work you do. I think my commissioners had it figured out that they worked for well below minimum wage. So thank you very much.
Thank you. We have 6 speakers, and if commissioners will.
Sonke and Mike, I'm going to have to leave. It's 4:30, as I indicated. But I did want to get to the So we could take an excursion from this process and just talk about.
So pause on the public speak. Yeah, there were 2 announcements that are important for you to be aware of.
Thank you.
One is to my excitement, OAL informed us last week that they have approved the final statement of reasons for the deletion of 660, the action you took a while back. Good. So the rules were effectively deleted last week. So you're open. You are now governed by 102 of the code.
So the original
for elections.
So with that, can I make a motion to have, say, in the August meeting? I think that's enough time to have an election of officers.
Yes, you may.
So I'll make that motion.
Second.
As I take it, this is a motion to add that to the agenda for our August meeting?
Yeah, you're giving me direction to put it in the agenda for August in Ventura.
Motion made and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Unanimous. Thank you.
Thank you. So we'll be done. The other item announcement is based on some cancellations of several rulemakings, we've decided that the June meeting in Mammoth can be conducted in one day. It'll be a full day starting probably at 9 o'clock. For the whole day, so it'll be June 20th, all-day meeting.
That's a Wednesday, is that
That's
right?
Wednesday.
Okay. Since I'm the only one here who would be present, I'll take that into account. Thank you.
Okay. And with that, we will proceed with public comment on the PG&E. Thank you, Jack. Caitlin Gaffney, Tom Hafer, and Daryl Terra.
Thank you, Caitlin Gaffney with Ocean Conservancy. I just wanted to voice our concerns also with this proposed project. Obviously, nuclear safety critical concern for everyone, as well as for ocean resources. But we, too, have concerns about how this project is conducted. We've raised those concerns in comments on the draft environmental impact report and to the other regulatory agencies. I have a copy of our comment letter that we submitted with NRDC and a couple other local organizations, so I will share that with you here. Essentially, we are very interested in exploring whether there are ways for PG&E to limit the impacts of the project. Specifically, one of the concerns that's been raised by some of the geologists involved in the project is whether it's likely to be successful in actually resulting in the information that is sought. And so one of our suggestions is trying to sort of hone in on both the geography and limit the time of the survey to see if early results look favorable, as opposed to going full bore and resulting in the full extent of impacts. Is there a way to really target the studies and limit their duration to limit impacts? That said, I would say we also agree with the critical importance of monitoring. Fortunately, the site has been quite significantly has a lot of baseline monitoring because of the nuclear power plant adjacent. So I think the real question is, what do we do immediately after any project that is conducted? And then I would also voice our support for compensation to the fishing industry in the area. So I think there's actually still quite a bit of detail to be worked out in terms of the monitoring and any compensation efforts, and would encourage the commission to add their voice to that. I would also just really quickly flag that I think this issue raises a broader issue about the importance of having a structure in place to identify projects that are outside the commission's jurisdiction that could affect the marine protected areas that are within your jurisdiction. I don't think we have a very good way of tracking those projects, and we should. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom Hafer.
That's particularly well said, because there are a number of other agencies in the state of California who are attempting to co-opt our responsibilities, and some of them were listed.
Okay, Tom Hafer, followed by Daryl Tara and Bill Blue.
Excuse me. Just to follow up on what Commissioner Rogers said, in CEQA there's, as you know, guidelines that describe some of the processes by which CEQA documents are prepared, and this might be a place where the commission might be able to add a guideline to ensure that when there's activities that affect the MPAs, we get notice and get the ability to be aware of and respond to those. So some we can look at behind the scenes and maybe get back to the commission on.
Essentially, notify them that we're interested parties on any projects that might have an effect.
You know, I really agree with that idea. One of the reasons is you have a lot of people who come with who are seeking a permit to do something. And this isn't just true with PG&E. It's true with a whole bunch of people who are trying to build something somewhere or do something somewhere. And other agencies act as if they have authority, when in fact they may not have the complete authority.
Well,
and that's something that's really important to have out there.
Speaking of authority, we I think it's worth us remembering, and I'm sure that Director Bonham, if he were here, still here, would remind us that the commission actually doesn't issue scientific collecting permits. These permits are issued by the department under authority of regulations promulgated by the commission. But on the other hand, I'm sympathetic with what Commissioner Rogers said earlier about we have promised to do adaptive management of marine protected areas. It's hard to do that without full knowledge of what's going on there and the impacts of various activities. So I fully support, you know, getting as much information as we can about these kinds of impacts.
All right. Tom, we haven't forgotten you.
Mr. Vice President, Commissioner, my name is Tom Hafer. I'm a commercial fisherman out of Morro Bay. I'm representing the Morro Bay Commercial Fishing Organization. I would like to address some concerns about the seismic survey on the Central Coast. First of all, none of the studies listed by PG&E replicate the location, the duration, the water depth, the intensity of the proposed seismic survey, so all their information is unreliable. What I gave you was some pictures of some ears of some fish and an ear bone. You can see how fragile they are. I have three major concerns. The high intensity, 250 decibels, 6 to 10 streamers, hydrophones, 4 miles long, circling 1,300 miles, 3 to 1,400 feet, shooting the 18 air guns every 63 seconds for 120, every 123 feet for, who knows, 1 to 3 months. It's going to cause some, it's going to cause permanent damage to the fish. And, you know, we talked about the MPA a little bit, but we also got to remember about the RCA. Now, we've had a rebuilding plan on the RCA for 10 years now, and it's really a healthy area off Morro Bay, Cambria, Cayucas, all those areas, all the way down to Point Conception. And we got to really remember that those fish that we're trying to protect live in the RCA, and they're going to be right on top of it. It shows that after seismic sounding, those ear bones of those fish never recovered. After 15 days of 58 days, they still were damaged. And you can see how it, they just get worse and worse and worse. So the sacula of the ear is totally ruined. I got a lot to say, but let me just say one thing here. If PG&E gets this permit from you guys, California Fish and Game, it really needs to be attached a monitoring program. We have the resources, like I said, the last meeting to do that. We have the traps to do it with that I built personally and I took place doing monitoring the MPAs. Tim has the ROV that he can use. That would be a couple of ways to do that monitoring. And, Mr. Rogers, we do have, I would say we're not data rich on the MPAs around Morro Bay like Bouchon, Cambria, and those areas, and Peters Blancas, but I would say we're data moderate in those areas because we do have at least 5 years of studies done. And so we do have a small baseline that we can go on. So, yes.
If I may. Tom, what I'm afraid of is without a test, a monitor, then a test, then a remonitor. There's a possibility that 250 dB could literally cleanse an entire swath of the ocean.
Sterilize.
Of living, virtually sterilize it of living creatures. I know that sounds like an extraordinary thing to say. The trouble is we don't know.
We don't know.
And so I strongly recommend to the department that we do a moderate test of these of what they're planning to do, and do a biological survey to begin with, run a little experimental protocol, and then come in and take a look at, again, because I'll tell you, if their research is wrong and they sterilize that entire swath of the ocean,
I mean, we work now way too
what?
Hard.
I mean, that happened on our watch, Becky.
And like you said, we've been doing this for 7 years now, and you guys put a lot of time in that Central Coast, South Central Coast area. You know, we have 28 reserves there, and, you know.
I'm glad, Tom, to see that you're such a fan of those reserves.
Well, you know.
This is represents real progress.
It took me a little bit, but I finally got them.
We were thinking up here that perhaps we ought to drop one of those air guns into one of the department's fish hatcheries and see what results. Tom, I do have a question for you, though. The gentleman from PG&E mentioned compensating fishermen. How do you feel about that? I mean, are they?
Well, you know, our stance is we want to stop the project, mm-hmm. and that's where we're standing. You know, how much compensation? I mean, if our fisheries are ruined, if my spot prawn fishery goes away, if the black cod fishery goes away, if the Dungeness crab fishery goes away, what do we got? We got nothing. And it's so healthy right now. Our oceans are vibrant and healthy, and everything's, you know, biting, and everybody's making money. For this to happen now, it would just be devastated. You know, we'd be devastated for this. So compensation, yeah, but like you said, it's going to be a hard one to figure out.
Well, I was a little bit of a bad boy when I grew up in Newport Beach, and I will be the first one to admit, and if somebody wants to take me away, you know, they're probably going to have me. I'm admitting to a crime. I used to drop M80s off the end of my dock, and every fish within 100 feet would come
float
to the surface. I mean, they were just gonzo. You know, you cannot tell me that an MA is anywhere near 250 dB.
Well, you know, that paper I gave you last meeting, it showed the scales of the guns. And at 248, it was equal to Hiroshima Nagasaki. Okay. Thank you,
Mr. Richard. Rogers, thank you for that admission.
Well, right.
The game wardens are out of the room.
Yes, the game wardens are going to come and get me now.
In the commission's official record, we'll put that down as a keeper. And with that, we have Daryl Tara, Bill Blue, and Chris Vardis.
Hello, commissioners. Daryl Tara, Morro Bay Commercial Fishermen's Organization. I'm here on behalf of our local fleet. We have 120 members in our organization, and we're really concerned about this project with PG&E. With this, as we've all discussed, is 250 decibels, just not in the MPA, but outside. It's going to devastate our area. It just really seems obvious to me at those levels. And also, you know, I know the fellows here mentioned about the guys could just fish outside the area. Well, if those levels are going off, this noise carries far away. Like here with the studies done by Lechborg in 91, the catch rate was down 55% to 80% at only 239 decibels, and this is only for 43 hours and 11 days. And that was reaching out 9.2 kilometers, 5 miles away that these catch levels were down. So even if you go away from the area, the fishermen aren't going to be catching quite a ways away. I imagine it's going to be 30 to 40 miles before you're going to be able to make a profitable trip. And we've already lost. EcoTrust came to our town last week and showed us review of the five-year MPA. And what happened there, they showed us the area we lost for the MPAs, and it came out to 52% of the primary habitat, and not including Diablo Canyon, that would bring it up to 58.5%. So we're doing really good and working within these perimeters, but if we have something like this, you know, I want to be able to turn on the lights. I need some electricity, but I need to be able to pay for that electricity. So thank you.
You're preaching to the choir here. I was a sonar officer when I was in the Navy, and I know very well what you do when you have a thermocline. Blue whales can communicate over thousands of miles because they know how to get right underneath the temperature differential, and the sound waves go back and forth, reflecting off the top of the like a big sine wave for a long way. The amount of distance that a heavy noise can travel in the water is unbelievable. It's literally thousands of miles.
It's 10 times that of air, sound projection in water. You know, we got the sea otters. I worry about them because, see, they got to dive down to get their food. And, you know, they eat one-third of their body weight every day. So what are they going to do?
No,
they go down and they won't be able to feed properly. And we do have quite a few whales in our area at that time of year. We have a huge humpback, lots of blue whales in our area. Not the gray whale migration, but we do have a lot of marine mammals in our area at that time.
Thank you, Daryl. I must tell you, it's refreshing to see a fisherman who's worried about sea otters.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you. Bill Blue, followed by Chris Vardis, and Steve Holtz, and Tim Maricich.
Commissioners, my name is Bill Blue. I'm a commercial fisherman from Morro Bay, member of the Central Coast Sustainable Groundfish Association. I commend you for your response to your concerns of this project. Basically, I'm here to talk to you about the Dungeness crab fishery, which I participate in an area of the survey. I had tried to contact, well, I wrote letters to State Lands, to PG&E, and to Dean Wendt also to try and get some active stock assessment. I've been in this fishery for 37 years. We see many year classes in the area, upcoming year classes. When this survey is supposed to take place is prior to the upcoming season. If we don't do some type of stock assessment prior to this upcoming season, we have nothing to base what is there on. So if there's no crabs in November after they're done, who's to say that there was? So my concern to you is that this be an attachment to their permit, if you grant it, that the stock assessment takes place prior to issuance of the permit. Thank you.
Thank you. Chris Vardis, Steve Holtz.
Commissioners, Chris Vardis, I already spoke, but I was hoping maybe I could take the opportunity to just make a couple points. That's okay?
Yeah.
First of all, I understand your concerns are very valid. Just wanted to point out that the one slide that showed the Cambria MPA, the White Rock MPA, and the Point Bouchon, the survey operations, the high-energy surveys are proposed to take place within the Point Bouchon MPA, as well as that one geophone transect line. For the Cambria and White Rock, the only thing that would take place is the very northernmost portion of Survey Box 3, the churn lines, where only one gun is operating, would occur right adjacent to or within that MPA, as proposed with the Survey Box 3. The second thing I wanted to point out is that Columbia University, and they're the ones that operate this boat and carry out these surveys throughout the world, we can bring them back to you, have them give a detailed presentation of their survey operations, talk about their experiences conducting these surveys, the extent to which they've observed potential impacts to marine mammals and to fish. PG&E can make that resource available to you. Second thing I want to point out is that the National Science Foundation, which owns the boat, recently completed a program environmental impact statement that looked at continued operations of these seismic surveys and specifically the Langseth vessel, completed that EIS, and they're looking to file a record of decision very soon on that document. And we can make that document available to you or to Fish and Game staff.
Well, that's all fine as long as we have an experimental protocol that you test at the depth in the areas where you're thinking of doing this, and we see what the impacts are before you go to full scale.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Steve Holtz and final speaker, Tim Marisich.
Hello, Commission. My name is Steve Holtz. I am a ex-commercial fisherman, went back to school, became a biologist. I've had the pleasure of intimately seeing your MPAs in action along the coast. I have actually operated ROVs off of Tim Marisich's boat in each of the MPAs. It's really important, testing, the seismic testing. I can't even comprehend the damage of 18 shots at 250 decibels every minute. It's especially going to impact the fish with swim bladders. And we have some very important species of interest, the cow cod, the yellow eye, the picacho, and the canary in that area. I have seen incredible shots of yellow eye that are fecund, which is very, very pregnant. The fish, was over 70 centimeters long. Mitigation, paying a fisherman for that fish, you can't put a value on a fish like that. That fish is over 70 years old. My heart has changed towards fish, as I became a biologist, and I'm trying to repair a broken system, and I'm seeing it work. And I was asked to step up and speak my mind here. I think we have to be very careful when we go into a situation like this. We just can't go full bore. The repercussions are profound. Another thing, need to look at, if you take out a trophic level, it affects everything above it. Thanks.
Thank you. Tim Marisich. And Tim, I understand, has some cool imagery if you're interested.
I just got back from about a month ago. We had a 10-day cruise with the ROV down in Morro Bay. And we got done with our deep... We got done with our survey early, so we were asked to go out, and Tom Hafer was with us. We were asked to go. We had a half a day to look for yellow eye and cow cod. We did one short survey at Church Rock, and this year, yellow eye is approximately 70 centimeters. And you can see the belly, it's gravid. And we, in a short transect, we post-processed, there was 7 yellow eye in that one run. And then in deep water, we were asked to look for cow cod, and that we found also. Oh, yeah, just go ahead and run the video. So this is the video, but that's how all deep, I have for you.
How deep are you, Tim?
This is 78 meters. This would be on the top of Church Rock. Wow. And in this run here, we ran into 7 yellow eye. And the from my understanding, the survey is going to go right over the top of this. And all we need to do is bump the ROV leg into a rock, and yellow eye will go to hole. It'll go to ground into a, and that's the cow cod. And both these fisheries are, the yellow eye is on a 70-year rebuilding plan. So they are curtailing our fisheries drastically. Go ahead and run the video, and then that's it. That's there's Tom's spot run. This was in Tom's secret spot he took us to. So thank you.
So we'll be interested in doing something about this if Tom will give me his GPS coordinates.
That's how the cow cod tries to hide.
That'd be good cause.
This is a spot prawn. That's the one that Tom had left. Thank you, Tim.
All right, with that, commissioners, you're done with public speakers, and you could adjourn if you so choose.
You know, we will. This is the first time we've had a detailed briefing on this issue, and we, as Commissioner Rogers has said, and my other colleagues, will want to revisit this periodically to make sure that we understand the full range of impacts. And we would encourage you to come back to us with a proposal for more, some additional monitoring and experimental work to find out exactly what this is going to do to our, not just marine mammals, but the other range of marine life in the region. Thank you. Any other business? Entertain a motion to adjourn. Seconded and approved. We'll adjourn.